Abnormal Mapping, episode 159. I'm your host, Em, and with me is my regular co-host, Jackson.
It's time for gaming.
It's gaming time. What have you played this month?
Not that much. Been a light month.
Play some damn video games.
Well, I've been playing the ones that we've had to play, but it's, you know...
No, you didn't start doing that until like 4 days ago. Don't lie to people.
Well, I did this week because I usually do. Unless there's like,
I spent all this month grinding out the 6 hours of video game.
No, fuck off. I played them this week because that's what I do. And there's, you know, usually.
What'd you do the other 3 weeks?
Not much gaming. It's been bad time for the rest, but I have played another game. I do have something. You know, I have something. So you're just being rude to me for no reason.
That's correct. No, I mean, the bit is the reason. This is the dynamic.
Well, I played a bit of RoboQuest.
That's not what I... Did we talk about this last time?
Did I make it on last time? I mean, I've talked to you about it.
No, I think you just talked to me about it. I think that's what I'm doing.
Which is a roguelike action shooter that I quite enjoyed, but not enough to, you know, play the 20 hours it'll be to beat the roguelike version. I'm just not a big roguelike person. It's a cool game, though. Played it for like 5 hours, had a good time. But as with all of those, I got to the point where I was like, all right, yeah, I do a 40-minute run, and then I make one incremental tiny upgrade so I can get slightly longer in the next run. And it's just not the loop I love, but I might go back because of the...
Is there any game like that you do enjoy?
Not really. It's just, I'm just not a big...
I feel like I have Binding of Isaac, right? Like, I played a lot of Isaac this month. I played like 10 hours of Binding of Isaac this month. I'm still working on it, doing pretty good. But you don't like roguelikes. So every time you play a roguelike, it's like, it's not really what I'm looking for. I was like, why do you keep trying?
Well, the thing is, I like arcade games. I like a Geometry Wars, right? If Geometry Wars had a fucking... If when you played Pacifism in Geometry Wars, you could level up between times, it would make it worse. I would like it less.
Geometry Wars 3.
But they don't make the arcade game version, so I just treat the roguelike like an arcade game. I play it for a few hours, and I enjoy the shooting mechanics. Like, my time of being, like, actually annoyed by this is over. I went in knowing that I don't like roguelikes, but I will probably enjoy
the
action game.
You should get into arcade games, like actual arcade games.
Like actual ass arcade games, yes. Right? And not worry about this.
Yeah.
But this is the fucking Housemarque thing, right? Like, they used to make the one type of game, and then they made the other type of game, because no one cares anymore.
Oh, you should play Nex Machina. That's a good game.
Yeah, I should have done that. I've got that on Steam, I'm fairly sure. Is that on Steam?
Yeah, I think so. I think I played it on PS5, but
because
yes,
I don't know which one was... Because I know Resogun was a PS4 exclusive.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I might have it on my Steam Deck, actually, so that might be on PC.
And I've played and really enjoy Resogun. That's a good fucking game.
I like Nex Machina way more than Resogun.
Oh, yes. Nex Machina is...
I just don't like Defender as much. I liked Super Stardust HD more than Resogun also.
Nex Machina is in my library, and so I should give that... Yes, you're right. I should just play some arcade games, like, in that style.
Yeah.
But RoboQuest is a cool fucking shooter, though. Like, if you are okay with roguelikes being like that, then you're going to have a great time. I don't know. I like the action. I like it. The balancing... reloads on two guns. The way it works is that you reload when you switch guns. Like, there is a normal reload animation, but you really want to be having a setup that you know once you switch to the one gun, and then you switch to the next gun, and it reloads in the background while you're emptying the clip of the second gun, and you're always on a 100% uptime with the guns.
Yeah,
stuff like that. Just fun build stuff. It's cool. Don't have any deep thoughts, but I approve of RoboQuest. Other than the fact that I don't really like. Enjoy that genre, but that's not really a knock against the game, that's just me. Then I played fucking Nier Reincarnation.
Oh, right, fuck, I forgot about this one.
Because they were like, they took out the gacha from it, and they're like, it's finishing. If you want to see the story of the third Nier game, please click on it. And I was like, I hate Nier. Let me go sign up for that. You know the thing that I don't like? Nier and gachas.
I once again reiterate, you could just play things that you think you're going to enjoy.
But I was curious. Sometimes you're curious about a thing. By the way, I don't actually hate Nier. I don't know if I shouldn't people listening know my familiarity with it. Nier 1.
Oh, we both really like Nier, the video game Nier.
Yeah, I like Nier 1, especially the first half. I think some of the multiple ending stuff gets a little, I don't know, annoying. I think the like specific form of Yoko Taro's tragedy is a little hacky, and it doesn't hit for me like it does for a lot of people, but that's fine.
Like, I liked it more the first time I experienced it when I played Nier, but the second time I was like, really? Again?
I just remember playing Nier the first time, having like all the really obvious tragedies in the second half of that game happen, and being like, wow, I can't wait for the second playthrough where I fix these problems that could have been fixed with one line of dialogue. And then what they actually added was more crazy layers of bullshit on top of that. They added all the enemies going, no, don't kill me. I'm a little 5-year-old child and I have school tomorrow.
And you go, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah, they die. But the thing that is good about Nier, right? That party is undeniable. Those are four homies. Everyone loves them. Nier Man, specifically Dad Nier is my favorite in the one version I played.
I mean, that's the one I played, so yes.
But Vice, Kaine, Emil, great guys. Love it. One of the best.
Honestly, I could take or leave Emil also. But Kaine and Vice, they're the homies.
Emil's getting lifted up by, like, he fits into the dynamics well. I really like how he talks to Kaine and kind of lifts him up. And he's just kind of shy and doing better. I think it's worked. I think that party, fantastic party. Great party. That's my favorite stuff in those games. And then I liked Automata less because they were, you know, taciturn robots.
And also the worst boy who's ever lived.
Yes, and also I hate 9S so much because he sucks. And Reincarnation is just the parts I dislike about the. So, well, the gameplay is bad. It's a gacha game, but it's an Applebot one, who are the Ever Crisis guys. They make terrible gacha games. They, like, you look at Granblue, right? Or Genshin, or any other one that people actually play. You can imagine a version of those games where the gacha mechanics are taken out, some redesign work is done under the hood, and you have a real video game. You can't do that with this. It's just one number. Have you paid enough money to make the number big? That's the only mechanic. So there is no video game beneath it, really. There's none of like the synergies and the building stuff that you get from like that everyone's talking about with Granblue.
Well, yeah, our Granblue fans our friends who play Granblue, I don't even think they put that much money into it, if any.
Yeah.
They just, that's just a RPG at heart.
Yeah, so on that front, bad video game. Taking the gacha out only reveals how completely, like, much of a waste of time it is. There's, like, a top layer exploratory game, but it's not an exploratory game. It's basically just an oversimplified menu because you just walk in a straight line. And I'm like, yeah, in the version where you made this a real game, you could have made this like into an eco-like, because it's like a little kid running around being led around by like a little ghost that's like a sheet of paper called Mama. And I could see that working in like the real game, but the puzzles such that they are, sometimes you come to a door and you have to press the big button to open the door. That's it. So all that stuff is terrible. The video game part, Applebot have done it again. Same people that did Ever Crisis. They're just bad at this. Very bad at this. And then the story is the whole game is weapon stories. You run around finding weapons, and then you go into the weapons, and you have the weapon story delivered by a narrator, which like is delivered in the arch way the weapon stories are. So it's like the boy saw the soldier and realized it was his dad or whatever. So you don't even really get inside the character's head and hear their voices. It's all just deeply removed tragedy stuff. And the tragedies are hilarious. They just go all in. There's just so much happening all the time. I think one of the funniest ones, I mean, the funniest one is the one where they actually in like the actual video game did, then Who Gave You That Heart? That happened. A guy had to give his mum a heart transplant. I was going to sacrifice himself to give her the heart. But he actually gets interrupted from doing that by his mum dying. Because they go one step further here. There was another one where you learn about, like, okay, so a kid is at home and the invading nation attacks his home and kills his parents. And he like gets a look at the guy who did it while he's hiding in the closet. So he signs up for the army to eventually get revenge on the enemy commander. And that's his plan. And eventually figures out that the enemy commander was actually his dad because his parents had kidnapped him as a child and he was stolen as a one-year-old. And that's the big tragic twist of that story. So it's just like ridiculous things you could never have seen coming to twist the knife in of characters that you didn't like, you know.
You know when people used to do like Twitter chiller jokes?
Yes, yes. That's what I'm saying. Yes, it's just that.
yeah, that's what every one of these is.
And the, like, the near side quests were already kind of that, but like I said, the thing that makes the game works when they work is the characters are good. I like the characters. I like Kaine. They haven't done anyone as good as Kaine since Kaine. And it was a shame. I finished the whole story. I saw what's going to happen. Apparently there's now... Well, hey, near spoilers for where Nier's going. There's like a million infinite timelines in the Nier multiverse, and they're trying to find the one that doesn't lead to tragedy as they run the simulations of all the worlds forever.
Which tragedy? There's so many tragedies already.
They all go wrong, but they're trying to find the solution to
But the one back when there were people and they're all like ghosts who live in androids, or the one where the actual aliens came and...
So all of those are now in the entire game is set in the cage, which is like in one of the servers in the moon, which is paired with the server on the Earth, which was the one from the secret ending from the new game. And apparently this ties into the multiverse stuff that was introduced with Accord in Dragon Guard 3 that I don't even know about. I'm just saying, there's so much lore. There's so much lore. And this was the thing that I started to think about, that already mentioned on prior episodes about other things, is I don't understand the purpose of lore. Like, when it's still making the same simple story, right? It's still a story about people are trying... The ultimate point of Nier is things are bad in the world and conflict happens and violence happens and there's a tragedy, but you can't give up on hope. The same plot as any one of these. It just goes a little harder in the tragedy, right? But I would not call it that thematically complex. I don't know what is introduced, like, to take away from the story by adding this much fucking lore to decode. That's hidden in so many places. Like, oh, if you read this secret story, it connects this bit from Dragon Guard 3 to this bit from Automata, and we understand what's happening in the server.
This is just how you keep your fan base, consuming the product, right?
Right, that's all. Yeah. I mean, not if the game is
The answer. It's not that deep, but it's not serving like a narrative purpose beyond engagement. It drives engagement.
Yeah, and I just feel like I'm getting the same point, the same end point is being fed to me multiple times, but it's just becoming more and more complex.
You already got yours. It's called Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, my version of this is Kingdom Hearts is Light. We knew it was Light in 2001.
What's in the box?
But I still will, I'll still be there to find out what's in the box. I know Kingdom Hearts is Light. It's not going to say anything more to me, right? I have my own hole. They're the same thing on some level. None of us are free of sin. But, yeah. So I did that. Not that off. And then, speaking of more games I don't like, I played the Final Fantasy 16 DLC, the new one.
I gotta say, when they rolled out the patch and some of the changes that came around with the patch, I was like, we are never covering new games again.
Yeah, you were like crestfallen, because that would have saved, like, how long do you take play? You're like 25 hours or something ridiculous.
No. Final Fantasy 13 or 16 was 37 hours, I think.
Okay. You'd have been under 30 with this.
Yeah.
Because they added a change that made it so you could teleport back to... quest givers as soon as you complete the quest. Life changing.
They expand the range at which the interact with NPC button takes over the jump button, because that would save me about an hour off my playtime.
I can't experiment with that, but they did. There is a note that said in the patch notes that said they were like, oh, less accidental jumping. So maybe they may have done that.
Because that's just a square problem with all their games at this point, where you run up to a guy and instead of talking to them, you jump.
It's funny though. Yeah, but, so I played it, famously, we don't like 16 very much. I played the first DLC, it was bad. I played this one, it was also kind of bad, but it was better. It was not as bad. I would say it's my favorite stuff in 16. It doesn't fundamentally change it.
The weird thing about it is I feel like even the people who are higher on the game are kind of disappointed that it is just, like, the same thing. It looks a little nicer, but, like... Fundamentally, 16 is what it is, and everything they've been saying about, like, rethinking it or anything with the DLC is just not true.
Yeah, I mean, this has only been in development for a year, right? They have made some more content.
I knew this. So don't worry, I can perceive things innately.
They've made a few new weapons.
When he was like, oh, we're definitely going to give Jill stuff to do, I was like, no, you're not. Don't lie to me.
Oh, the Jill stuff's so funny. the plot of the DLC is really funny in a way that almost works for me. So, like, I don't like, you know, if you can go listen to our episode, I don't like the main game. It's super self-serious and morose about slavery, and its plot is basically just, you know, regular shonen plot.
We have a whole episode about this, yes.
And that doesn't change the tone in the DLC, but they change the subject matter enough, and they push the self-serious stuff like a little further, to the point where it becomes like not full Stranger of Paradise, not even close, but it goes in that direction. Like, so the Tombaris in 16 are like cursed creatures that live in the woods that are like channel the hatred of man and can curse the darkness in the woods, and you like they can die because you've been afflicted with the Tombari curse of hatred. You know, the funny little guys, the Tombaris, they're the hatred of all of us that live inside blah 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 darkness. And that's funny. When Clive's going around being like, the hatred of the Tombaris, I'm like, that's just funny. I don't know if it's intended to be funny, but it is funny in a way that is like more enjoyable than the main game. There's a bit very early on, because the premise of the DLC is basically that like you go to Final Fantasy Wakanda through like a little, you know, shield to find the secret jungle where all the people are hiding. They even have the Phantom Menace bubble. It's like a time bubble. But it's doing that, and in the center of it, the thing like keeping it all going is a single baby. It's also Omelus, and the baby's been frozen in time and tortured for 100 years. And the scene where Clive, Jill, Joshua, Torgal, and the new party member, quote unquote party member, but she does fight alongside you, but she doesn't do anything, right? 16. But when they all walk up to the middle of the crater, and they're gonna find the source of the evil, and it's just a fucking baby crying like for frozen time. I lost my shit laughing. That's hilarious. Much better than like, oh, if we must punch the guy who's really boring to stop conflict or whatever. So that was all fine, but the problems remain in the introducing new movesets, but like the enemies don't do enough. I still use the same moves I did in the main game, because you have to make your own fun with 16. If you're not going into the lab to like experiment with combo timings, the game never changes, because the enemies are all the same. They don't do enough. They add like a little couple of things, like now they can freeze you, not as like a status, you just get frozen in space. And there's also like areas of effect on the ground where if you go through them you start moving slowly, but those were the only levers they can pull. They can't put like statuses in or elemental weaknesses. So there's very little they can actually do to fundamentally change the game. But yeah, it was fine. It was not a huge, like, oh, they've made it even worse. Oh, they've ruined the ending. Oh, well, you know, it was just some more of that game that I didn't really like, but not as many of the bad parts. So anticlimactic, but there you go. The saga is finished.
There you go. I'm not playing that DLC. I feel pretty confident about that.
But you are correct that every single game gets patches. So why would we ever play a game at launch again?
I mean, the games I like, we like Prince of Persia quite a bit, but that game's getting some, like, Combat Arena DLC I don't care about, but at the end of the year, it's getting both, like, platforming challenge DLC and story DLC that I do care about. I'm like, we should just wait a year.
Yes. So, look forward to less new games, especially any, like, games of that size that are likely to be patched.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah, if there's, like, an indie game, we might just pick it up if we're interested enough, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not, like, a firm rule, but having that happen to multiple games in a row. You know, the patches are nice.
Yeah. All right. I also have 3 games. We have the same amount of games. So good job. You undersold your amount of gaming, I think.
Yeah, but it wasn't like interesting. Anyway, you go.
I played Needy Streamer Overload, which is a princess raising game by Zimono, in which you play the producer of a streamer named Ame-chan, who streams as like almost like a VTuber, but it's like she's still like she just puts on a cosplay outfit called Oh My God Kawaii Angel, and then streams on YouTube. And you during the day and evening, you get like time to spend. Like you're like, we go out, or you could watch Netflix, or you could vanity search yourself, or you could post online or whatever. You could sleep. They're like in a relationship, so you're like, we could fuck or whatever to manage her mood. And then in the evening, you stream, and while doing different activities, like inspires her for different stream categories. Like when you stream, there's like a whole set of like 16 different things, but you have to like unlock them and level up which streams you're going to do, like whether you want to do ASMR streams or gaming streams or like general streams or conspiracy theory streams or whatever. And so you're managing all of that. Also, she's extremely mentally ill. And so you are just trying to like navigate her depression and low self-worth as she goes through that stuff. And so you spend time, you unlock streams, you do the streaming. The streaming, you're like looking at the YouTube chat while she does, like, it's like maybe like a minute long, like little like condensed version of a stream. And you want to delete like bad comments. And then the super chats that are good, you can choose two for her to comment on. And then when she learns new, when she does activities, she'll like tweet on her main as, oh my God, Kawaii Angel, but then also tweet on her alt. And also often those are diametrically opposed moods. It's a Japanese game, but I feel like it so clearly encompasses the reality of anyone online. I think the localization's incredible. It's very good. And there's like a bunch of endings, most of which are weird or kind of bad. Like there's some where she, you know, just has a total breakdown and goes full like Yandere and like stabs you to death, to ones where she gets on the Galactic Railroad, you know, from the anime, goes into space.
I do know about that from the anime. That's true.
One, the like final ending is like Needy Streamer Overlord being invoked, which you get because the whole goal is you have a month to get a million subs, and you get that final ending by ending the month at 9,990,999, you know, 9999 infinity. And then it's sick. It's just plugged into like the anime shit that our audience probably like likes, by being a Japanese game instead of based on like Western chat and like streaming culture. I liked it a lot. It can be a little like over the top, and like edgy for the sake of it a little bit, but I did like it quite a bit.
Nice.
It's also like very like I played like the first time just like straight, so saw what ending I got, and then I just looked up a guide to get a lot, because there's like 27 endings. I just used a guide to help get the other endings, because that's too much work. And all told, getting all the endings was like 9 hours. It was very approachable, one of these. Mm-hmm. And then I played Felvedek, which is a RPG by Josef Pavelka, which came out like last month. Which is a like 3 hour traditional like turn-based JRPG set in 15th century Slovakia, where you're a alcoholic knight called Pavel, and you decide, like, trying to win your wife back who hates you because you're a drunkard and sucks. You get embroiled in this like cult that's working with like the Hussites and Ottomans who are invading your lands, and you and this priest go around trying to like figure out what the cult's doing. It seems like they have this weird drug that turns people into monsters, and the game itself has all these like 2-bit color depth like monochrome backgrounds that you're running around in, and then all the battles are like first person as you're fighting you know, knights and you know, guys with spears and sometimes weird cult monsters. It's really good. It's like really, really hard, especially early on, where if you go down the wrong path, you're going to fucking get murdered because you're going to run to a guy you're not leveled for. And so I found it a little difficult, especially early on. But by the end, I was managing quite well, partially because you spend the first half of the game with only two characters and you can have up to four, and having two is rough. So you just save a lot. It works on Steam Deck just fine. It has like really cool, like lo-fi, like almost PlayStation era cutscenes sometimes. They're just like low poly 3D. They look like when someone does like art on Twitter. It's like, this is like a lo-fi PlayStation thing. But because of the like subject matter and art style, I'm like, this is like evoking Kodelka in a certain way to me.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just like grim European stuff.
That makes sense.
Liked it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. It's cool. Way more arch and like pulpy than like Pentiment or whatever. Yes. But it's also like one guy making a 3-hour game and not Obsidian Skunkworks team.
Yes.
But people like talk, I heard people talk about like, oh, like this and Pentiment. I'm like, they're really not that close together. Then they're both take place in like medieval Europe.
I mean, you don't have any, there's not that many games doing that, like without being full fantasy. So I get how, you connect those two, right? Especially if they're both narratively driven RPGs.
Yeah. But it's like $10 and it looks great. And I quite enjoyed it.
Cool.
There's a real, like, it's not as good as like, Harry and Kim from Disco Elysium, but there's a real like at odds buddy cop thing to Pavel and his pious priest guy running around trying to do stuff.
Oh, I love a pious priest guy.
Yeah. And the last game I played was Blazing Lasers, which is a vertical shmup from Compile. Apparently based on a Japanese like toku movie called Gunhead, because the Japanese name is just called Gunhead. I did not know that until looking this up after I played it.
Oh yeah, Gunhead, famous movie in like our scene. I don't know if
it's really. I'd never heard of it.
There's a known B movie.
Okay. Anyway, this came out in 1989. I played originally when it came out on the Wii Virtual Console, I think, because that's when I was introduced to TurboGrafx games, because I basically knew nothing about the console until Virtual Console happened. And I was just looking for something short to play on the day I had off this week. And I remembered like most, I got through like, it's like 9 stages and I got through like stage 6 before I really started having to cheese it. So I was like, yeah, I still got it a little bit. Blazing Lasers is very, because it's 89, it's not like super intense graphically, but it's got like a bunch of different like weapon upgrade paths and some options. And it's not like super bullet helly, you know, because the genre had not gone in that direction yet. It's just a straightforward one of these. It's got a great soundtrack, like all the TurboGrafx shooters this era.
Yeah. I mean, the TurboGrafx sound chip is so cool.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
I don't play that many TurboGrafx games. I play like 2, but every time I do, I'm like, damn. I bet if you had this in like the early 90s, you'd be like, damn, I've got the real shit.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think anybody, I mean, I know there's people in like America at a TurboGrafx, but like the PC Engine is just the coolest thing in the world to me. Everything about it is neat, even if it's like not typically genres I particularly like. I'm not a huge like arcade game and shooter person. I enjoy them, but that's not like my pet genres. But like every time I boot that thing up, I'm like, man, this thing was like out against the NES and it just kicks the shit out of it in every way.
Oh, right. The PC Engine was 87 in Japan. That's crazy.
Yes. Yeah.
I get how it failed in America, kind of, because it looks like that. It was later, and it's called the TurboGrafx.
Yeah, it's called the TurboGrafx. It came out later, so like the SNES and everything was already out. The CD-ROM add-on that extended the PC Engine in Japan just wasn't a big a deal over here. And also, they weren't bringing over the big like PC Engine, especially on CD games, which were all either shmups, visual novels, or RPGs that they weren't translating, right? Like,
yeah,
just the taste of the gamers were different, and it's a lot of anime games that still don't have English translations.
You gotta put in a lot of money translating text if you're gonna do PC Engine games.
Especially like the later PC Engine games, like on Novel Not New, we played like Private Idol. A lot of those games have like full voice acting, right? But you know, and no one's doing that work in the early 90s in America for like a $600 CD, like CD-ROM add-on for something.
Only Snatcher.
Yeah, like this famously like hurt the Sega CD also in the same way when that happened.
But like, remember when we did Snatcher, I was like, man, I wish I could play any other of these games. But no.
Police Knots. Someday we'll play Police Knots, probably.
Well, yes, I would like to play Police Knots as well, but it's not the same when it's like the other Kojima one. I just want to like mess about with this era of visual novels, which is just kind
of... Private Idol's really good.
I should check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty short. It's kind of got a chill, you know, mystery anime vibe. I liked it quite a bit. But that was it for me. Like I said, I played like 10 hours of Binding of Isaac. That's still very good. I have nothing to say about Binding of Isaac that I haven't said a million times before, but it continues to be the game I go to when I need to play a video game.
It's still Binding of Isaac.
Yep, that's correct.
It'll never change. I guess it does change, but...
Not really. Not anymore. Also, they're done. They're not working on it anymore. No more Binding of Isaac.
Is that actually true? Because the last
time... Yeah, they said that there's no more DLC. Like,
the last time he said that he was lying, so...
Oh, I know, but I feel like this time it's probably true.
But I don't know how, like... Like, doesn't he want to get out of fucking Nicalis? You fucking suck. I'm not entirely sure how that all works out. I'm not plugged into the situation.
But I just remember people, like, I feel like the it's not like they're selling more and more each time, right? The rose is off the vine for Binding of Isaac. Also, like, it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been like 15 years?
Yeah. But even talking about like the new version, not since the original release, but even talking about Rebirth, it's been a long time.
There are still a future development. There's still a future development section on the Wikipedia, but it's just we want to add co-op.
Oh yeah, I'm not interested in that at all.
I think they want to add a few further mod things, like just the game's going to last forever, right? But this does look like there will not be another expansion pack. There's not going to be another fucking Repentance, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know Repentance added like an actual honest to God ending to Binding of Isaac, which is crazy.
I mean, there's already like 20 endings to Binding of Isaac. I understand what you mean when you say that, but it also sounds ridiculous to me.
You haven't seen it yet, so.
No, I'm not nowhere close to that.
No, close. You have to let me know in 7 months when you get there.
I don't even know what the like criteria is for, like that involves floors I have not seen yet.
Cause the last time you had like a hole for Isaac this deep was like in 2013. 2014, yeah. Like multiple expansions ago. So you got a lot. You got a lot to build up to. But you're getting there, especially with the I feel like the map and like item mod, the
item mod is a game changer. That's crucial. It's not really a map. There's no map mod. I don't know what you're talking about when you say
it
map.
It just kind of like changes the UI, doesn't it? Doesn't like help how all that, or is it just it's literally just the item thing?
Yeah, it's just the item thing. It tells you what an item does when it's on the ground in front of you. So you don't have to check the wiki every 8,000 seconds.
Yes. Well,
that's it. We should play some music and get into our game clubs.
Gaming.
Game club this month is two games for the Sega Mega Drive that I picked. First one, I mean, we could go back and forth, but I feel like we should maybe try to split them a little bit, and then we can just kind of freeform it a little, because I want to introduce them all separately. Okay. First off is Dynamite Heady, which is a 1994 game developed by Treasure. Again, for the Mega Drive. We played the Japanese version because specifically Sega requested Treasure rework the game for Western release to make it harder so people couldn't just rent it and beat it in a weekend. And they just gleefully did that. They made the game way harder and took out all the story bits and put it out in America. This is a game I've never played before. I just heard about it. I knew people liked it. I played Gunstar Heroes, which is Treasure's like first game on the Mega Drive, which is a fucking classic, stone cold classic. I've also played obviously like Radiant Silver Gun and Ikaruga. I'm like not Treasure ignorant or anything, but I've always meant to play this one, and that's why I picked it.
Gunstar Heroes is Treasure's first game. Oh, they spun off from Konami. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. I was like, these guys are too good at making this game to have started with Gunstar Heroes.
Yeah, no, they were just like, oh, we don't want to make Castlevania the rest of our lives, and then they went on to make some of the greatest games ever made.
Damn. There you go. Man, yeah. Being ex-Konami in 1991, that's gotta be crazy.
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, oh, right, these are like the motherfuckers who make video games.
Making video games here. Yeah, so we played Dynamo Heady. It's about 2 hours long, if you know what you're doing. About four, if you don't. and it has a story. Like, there's more story in the Japanese version, but to say I can summarize it is a little much. You are Dynamo Heady, and you are a discarded puppet, but the King Dark Demon, when he discards you, doesn't realize that you are actually the greatest puppet destined to save the world, and you go on a journey, and you save the world.
Well, it's introduced with like a almost like a opening of like a puppet show, but also it's got like the Abe's Odyssey beginning, where it's like all the puppets are being rounded up and you're the one who escaped the monster who's chasing you.
Yeah, so like the real thing is the framing, right? It's the whole thing is framed as like a stage play, but also the play is a like puppets. You are a puppet both because you are being a performance in the stage play, but also in the universe of the play depicted within the video game, puppets are like a meta, like a fictional thing that means something in the weight of the world.
They saw Super Mario Bros. 3 and were like, coward shit.
Like, which it's more complicated to describe than it is to be. It's not that deep.
It's just theming. It's just like a nice, cool theming where like in multiple levels, you'll just see like guys setting up sets. And like when the screens transition, sometimes it's like, oh, the background's wheeled off and a new background is wheeled in front.
Yeah. And like at the
your health is a spotlight.
Yes, the health is spotlight. And at like the very, very end, the secret final boss is like out of the world, the money man.
Oh, yeah, the producer secret ending is so stupid.
Which, I watched that one on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, so did I, because I was like, this basketball game is fucking terrible.
Oh, it's the worst basketball game! Is there, like, scientists have said maybe there's a way to influence whether the ball goes in the net, but they're not sure. After 30 years of research, they cannot definitively conclude whether you can actually influence where the ball goes, or whether you just stand under it and shoot up until it goes in.
Yeah. So the main thing is this is like a side-scrolling action game. Heady himself, because he's a weird puppet, can throw his head in 8 directions and hit guys. He can also power up his head with like 17 different pickups that all do different things in kind of like a Kirby sort of way. Yeah. It's like somewhere between the Gunstar Heroes guns options and Kirby power-ups.
I was thinking Kirby. And I was also thinking like down the line, like, oh, I had always, people had always sold Spark the Electric Jester as like stealing from Kirby specifically, but it feels very similar to stealing from here as well, just like the Sega-ness of it. I'm like, oh.
I mean, like all the way back to like Contra, whatever. Like this is just action games of like the pre-3D era.
Well, the specific, like, you get a power that changes your moveset in like a fundamental way. Like it's become a different game, but it's also not so important that you're going to have it for more than like 45 seconds.
Yes.
It is a different approach. Just when the amount of things you need to do to make an entirely new moveset are so much smaller, you can just do 17 of them and throw them out there. But also this game is just extra. There's just so much shit in it. It's like 2 hours long and every screen something new and crazy is happening and bespoke.
Yes. Yeah, that part is the part where this is like the treasure special. Like Gunstar Heroes famously has like a whole bit that's like a board game and weird like faux like first person, the boss is firing at you from the screen and stuff that's from like the Turtles games that Konami did. This game has like a full-on like tower climb that's like Castlevania Bloodlines did, which is another of my favorite Mega Drive games. There's a cool boss that goes in and out of the screen like it's a 3DS game.
they're going crazy with the graphics in this game.
Yes. Oh, there's like the one where the screen flips upside down, like the whole screen does like a weird, it's not a mode 7 thing, but it does this all like sprite skewing background layer rotation as the screen flips up and down.
Even that like sells it short, because like you get up to that level, right? And the thing right before it is a thing where you're like going up and using one of the powers to get up and down on the top of the and the bottom of the screen, right? With the spike thing to avoid an oncoming train. And I'm like, oh, I'm going between up and down the train. I was like, kind of proto VVVV stuff. And then I get to the next screen, and I'm literally flipping the whole like world. I'm like, but this is actually VVV, like for real, they just did it on the Mega Drive in '94 for like 2 screens and then 1 boss fight, and then you're done with that. There's enough of that. We're over.
Yeah.
The amount of like full video games that are just in here every 15 minutes is wild.
This is the thing about Treasure to me, especially if, like this early hour, they just throw everything at the wall.
Yeah, like I completely understand how you would play this, and it would just, you would, it would change life. You'd just be like, why isn't everyone considering this the greatest game of all time? Fuck this Nintendo bullshit.
I mean, some people do, you know?
That's what I'm saying. There's a certain
type of, there's a certain type of classic adventure game sicko that, like, this is video games to them.
I 100% get it. And they're probably very sad right now. They're all that guy from that one anime.
Yeah, I mean, they're all playing, like Noita, right?
They are probably playing Noita.
Because there's, like, there's games that do this now, right? But they're all, like, very small indie games that are, you know, I guess they also just take an hour to play, and they're all, like, $4 on Steam.
Like a 100-hour roguelike, I'm
not Noita.
Sure.
What's the game I'm thinking of that has, like, a sequel, but it's kind of like this, but there's, like, a multiple characters? You don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm so lost at sea.
Sorry, Noita's, I'm going to look. You just keep talking, and I'll just look through my Steam library.
Noita's the roguelike about deforming land. I remember that, but I don't know what you're going on about. Anyway, you keep looking while I keep talking. But yeah, I was like, it's so crazy how many things are happening constantly, and all of them are interesting. The aesthetics of this game are wild. It just doesn't look like anything else. I know of Treasure, and I've seen bits of Gunstar Heroes, and I've seen bits of whatever the Saturn one is, Guardian Heroes.
Oh yeah, I really want to play Guardian Heroes. I've never played it.
But I've not played like a full Treasure game before now. And the aesthetics of this are, like, overwhelming. They're weird. They're just weird. It's, like, it half the time it doesn't even look like a real game. Like, I'm always waiting for the attract screen to end so the game can begin, but there's no, like, because of the play theming, that's just the game. The game just looks like that all the time.
Yes.
And, like, the design of Hedy doesn't really look like the other Japanese mascot platformers. It looks very European to me. Like, it's pulling in from other influences. Like, he's kind of a Rayman with his head flying around. He, like, you know.
Yes. It specifically says that, like, the design was based off of, like, Western, like, Terry Gilliam art.
Yes. It looks extremely Monty Python. That's true. Yes. That's completely true. I didn't, like, make that connection myself, but that's another huge influence there.
The game I was thinking of, for the record, is Noitu Love 2 Devolution.
Okay, that's a very different game.
Yeah, but you understand how I remembered the name and said Noitu instead of Noitu.
Yes, Noitu Love 2.
But that is a 2008 action game that is fucking sick. And it's got, like, that one you play with, like, just a keyboard and mouse because it's 2008. But it's extremely got Treasure vibes in terms of a bunch of weird, cool shit. But it's also very short.
Yeah, it looks fucking sick.
Yeah.
This is from the Iconoclast guys. We did before Iconoclasts.
Oh, okay. That totally makes sense to me. I wish there were more games like this and less games like Iconoclast. I even liked Iconoclast one off, but it's not Noitu.
I mean, there's just no money in making 2-hour long, expressive, crazy video games like this. You got to make the 18-hour long RPG that people can make fan out of and, like, can support the community stuff in a way that is just, the economics just don't exist for a game like Dynamite Heady anymore, and that's sad.
Yeah, there's like Bleed and Bleed 2, but even that's kind of a different thing, right?
That's much more like Score Attack action game stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I was expecting. I was expecting more mechanical depth, I guess.
No, that's IntiCreates. You're thinking of different guys.
I'm thinking of IntiCreates. Well, it's specifically that, like, when people talk about Treasure, they talk about them in the way that I would say 3D gamers talk about Clover, and they talk about God.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Have a similar kind of cult reputation, so I was expecting something equally, like, systemic, but it's not. It's in the whole other direction. The Hedy's moveset is very simple. Never changes, actually. The changes only come later from, like, fundamental shifts to the world design in literally every stage. Like, your moveset's very simple, but occasionally you get power-ups that completely change what you do. And also, more importantly, like, the thing you're doing in every stage is radically different, right? Oh, this stage is built around, like, rotating, like, four beams, right? The, like, form platforming challenges, and you and the enemies can both interact with them. And that's, like, 10 minutes, and we're done with that. It doesn't come back again, right? Then you're climbing the big spiral, which, like, you're locked to the middle of the screen because it's a rotating sprite layer, you know, just like you said, just like in Castlevania Bloodlines. And bits of the tower are being knocked out from underneath you. Then you're doing the Asonic, like, Tails flight section.
Yes.
Where you're fighting a big, like, Russian nesting doll of random heads.
Oh, I love that boss. That boss is so cool. That's extremely a Treasure boss to me.
So this is the thing. When the boss design was the thing I didn't realize, like, how clearly fundamentally influential Treasure is to, like, Undertale and stuff like that.
Yes.
Because this specific kind of weird, off-kilter, huge sprites that perform a sense of, like, unease in the world.
The boss specifically is, it's a giant baby head that you defeat, and the baby head cracks in half and then turns into a man, and then turns into an older man, and then turns into, like, old grandpa at the very end.
Yes. It goes, like, reverse the way you'd expect it to go.
Yes.
As you're breaking apart these heads. But just, like, the weird off-kilter sprites, and I can absolutely see, like, Terry Gilliam influence there. Didn't realize this was, like, a middle ground between how you get from fucking Monty Python to Undertale, but I now see the line there. I'm sure there's many other steps on the way that I'm less familiar with, but I can see the connective tissue. Like, the early boss fight where, like, the guy comes out from, the back of the stage. I'm like, this is just doing what the Metatron boss fight did in Undertale. Like, stolen directly.
Yeah. Like, I remember between Diamond Heady and, like, Moon, right? Because, like, Moon was a huge influence on what's-his-face.
And I'm like, oh, I knew intellectually, right, the Treasure games were deeply influential and beloved, but just seeing it firsthand and constantly being like, every few screens is a thing I recognize that got pulled forward into future video games.
Yes.
And it's just very exciting. It was very nice to see all that laid out. Very cool.
Yeah. The world's most suffering cat keeps coming back to menace you.
Got a cool theme tune, though.
That's true. That's true.
I think the game we've covered it reminded me the most of, which now knowing they were ex-Konami guys, I guess makes sense, would be Zone of the Enders 2, which is a 3D version of a similar simple action game where everything is a radically designed, completely different video game set piece with the mechanics. Man.
That might be like the last gasp of that in like AAA development.
Right, because they did that but like for a 3D game on a PS2.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's extremely designed like one of these arcade games.
Yes.
In a way that like, I think of it as being so unique to that game, because all the games I'm playing are like probably from Devil May Cry, right? And much more about building slowly on mechanics over time and Resident Evil stuff. And not this like very short run of ideas through stages in the post-arcade game style. I got to play more 90s classics like these, apparently, because I like it. It's good.
Yeah. This game's real fucking hard, I will say.
They made it harder? For fuck's sake?
Yeah, the idea they made it harder is, like, unfathomable. Because I, like I know a lot of people playing along got hit at the hard wall on the tower climb. I actually didn't find the tower climb hard because platforming is the thing I'm good at. Weirdly, it was, like, the weird little boss with all the armor on the, like the cylinder climb right after the tower climb that gave me like some of the most trouble in the video game.
Yeah.
But then it was like, once I got to like stage 8 or whatever, I was like, this is too fucking hard for me. I need to start. Cause I was playing on my Mister, for both these games, which is a fundamental, there's a weird difference in playing games on Mister versus playing games on an emulator. Whereas Mister doesn't have save states, but does have cheats like, you know, Game Genie codes. However, you have to have the table of the Game Genie codes, and we're playing a fan translation of a Japanese ROM.
Yes.
And guess what doesn't have cheat tables is fan translations of Japanese ROMs. So this game I had to play for real until I got to the part where I had to switch to my Steam Deck where I had save states.
I was just playing in, you know, save states the whole time.
This will be really fun when we get to our second game because the Mister saved my ass on a bit of this.
I did not get cheat. There was a point in our second game where I was like, I wish I could stop using save states and start using cheats because for the love of fucking God, this is annoying.
Let me tell you, there's one particular cheat on the Mister, which was walk on air that I used the second time I ran into a platforming room.
I had to do so many of those fucking jumps across the bottom of the pits.
I did the first one legitimate, and then I was like, there's got to be a cheat code for this. There was. Fuck this.
Well, preview for future discussion.
this game I had to switch because I just like, I'm never going to finish this if I can't save state through the back, like, couple levels of this game because they're just fucking hard.
They're just hard.
I think Hedy takes a good amount of damage, but, like, it just throws a lot of enemies at you and a lot of, like, the boss, like, openings are just really, like, small.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Is like, mechanically, I found the game okay to annoying sometimes, right? Like, I think it is the breadth of the experience and there's like aesthetic wonder that I think is the appeal here.
It's like when you look at this and you look at like Batman the Animated Series, the Genesis game.
Yes.
Like these are the games that like Cuphead's pulling from for like literal boss inspiration, right? Like
directly,
it's the kind of like there's like a score attack a little bit. Like this game has every level has like secret objectives that add to your score at the end of every level. It's like, did you get all the secret objectives? That's the thing that you can like really like grind out if you're a sicko about it. They're like the solution to your Mario coin thing, where you don't like the three Mario coins, but they hide it a little more, and it's more about like understanding the level design, which is cool. There's like one, let me finish my point. But like, it's so much about like big set pieces that you just like learn to avoid enemies. Like, that's what video games were, is like learn to avoid the enemy learn the enemy patterns and learn to avoid and hit their weak points is what video games used to be.
Yes. I was only attacking guys when they were in my way. Cause there's no point in going out of your way. Like, you're not getting drops from them. Right.
No.
So they're only useful as obstacles.
Mm.
Which is something that I think has a far more profound effect on the next game.
Yes.
But it definitely, like at first I was being fairly cautious and using my head to take guys out. I just got to keep going. Because the longer time you spend in a level, the more times you're going to get hit. It playing cautious did not actually help me.
No. No, no. I do think the game is, like, pretty good at easing you in. It's just, like, you know, it's a hard game.
It's a hard game.
It scales up.
And the bosses are hard, and I think it really needs one thing it needs, a button to make it so you stand still. Like, I need to be able to aim while not, like, I need to be able to aim diagonally up while not pressing forward to move forward, right?
Oh, you need the Metroid button.
I need to hold the Metroid right trigger to stay still shoot diagonally up. Thank you, please. Yeah. Desperately.
This is extremely the Mega Drive does not have shoulder buttons problem, right?
Yes.
I mean, not that every game's like this, but when I think of games with guns versus games with that don't have guns, I think of the you need to plant your feet. Even Gunstar Heroes has a plant your feet firing mode change.
Well, like,
right?
Where Contra has that, right? Like Contra is the game for doing this, standing still and firing in a diagonal line.
I was thinking of Gunstar Heroes, because Gunstar Heroes is a different game if you're like, I'm going to plant my feet versus I need to move around and shoot guys.
Yeah.
Because I don't even think you get, it's been a while since I played Gunstar Heroes. I don't even remember if you get 8-way firing unless you plant your feet.
Oh, damn.
You might only have like a 4-way.
That's a huge change.
I could totally be wrong. I don't remember. It's been a while.
But like, you can't shoot your head down unless you're in the air. So there's a lot of times where you are required to jump up to go below a platform. And then it's just kind of like a little unpolished mechanically, which is not necessarily a problem, but it does show like these are it's much more a game about like cool things on your screen. There's always a new thing on the screen. When you're fighting a big rotating boss that you hit its like weak point on its back, it's not a great like fight mechanically. It's just like a wonderful thing to see in the year 1994 on your Sega Mega Drive.
Oh, the boss at the top of the tower is just like a Sonic Rush boss in like 2D. It's wild to me because you're like running around the ring on the outside as the big boss is in the center on like opposite side of the arena to you. But it's all rendered in 2D because there's no 3D anything. And I was like, man, Sonic just stole this boss.
They
wholesale
do
for
crazy
years.
Shit with sprite layers.
Yes.
Like the second world has a platform that goes from vertical to horizontal and...
Oh, right. The one that rocks back and forth like while you're on it. Yes.
And it became like, it's kind of one of the worst stages to play because it becomes very unclear, like linguistically in the mechanics. Is that guy above me? I can't like tell what like relative space I'm in.
Because you only interact in your Z layer, but your Z layer constantly changes and it's actually not very clear as what Z layer you're on sometimes.
But also the Z layers apparently are still there even when it's flat. Because there are times where I would like, if this was a Fez game where the perspective was changing the hitboxes, I would be hitting that guy that's above me, but I'm not because in the rotated version, and just stuff like that is just conceptually crazy, really awkward to control, but they put it in there because it's just like an impressive thing they can do.
It's really
virtuosic.
Cool. And level one lasts 2 minutes, so who cares?
Yeah. And it kind of sucks, right? As a video game mechanic, I would say it's kind of bad, but the fact they did it is incredibly impressive. It's visually incredible. Like I say, it lasts about 2 minutes. You get mildly annoyed and move on. And if that's like the worst effect of their like throwing shit at the wall nature, it's like definitely a trade worth making.
I found this game deeply impressive and I mostly really enjoyed it. Like, it's got like I don't think it's like as like gentle or fun as Rystar. Have you ever played Rystar? Rystar is like one of my favorite Mega Drive games.
I have not. If I asking me if I've played a Mega Drive game, the answer is probably not.
You should play Rystar. It's like a later, I mean, I guess 94 is also kind of late, but it's like a later game. It might be around the same era. And that's like a mascot platformer where he's like a little star guy. And his whole thing is that he extends his arms out to grab hold of stuff and like pulls himself to it, which is actually a thing that Treasure will do in Mischief Makers for the Nintendo 64, famous, the one 2D N64 game. It's not the only one, but the major 2D N64 game, Mischief Makers. And it's just really good. It's like a slower Sonic. You mentioned that this reminds you of Rayman 1, and I was like, Rayman is kind of more of a Rystar to me. It's like a lot. It's like doesn't have the speed of Sonic, but it's fun. It's much more approachable. It's not like a sickos game like Dynamite Heady is. I would say give it a shot. Just load it up and play a little bit of it. You'll immediately be like, oh, this is pretty neat. It's got cool underwater stages, which is rare in a game of this era.
This is just like my Nintendo bias showing in that, like, I'm not even a Nintendo person, but when I went back in time and played the old games, I generally played the Nintendo ones. So my history in these kind of games, like, you know, I played Mario and Zelda, and I've played some Metroid, and I've played Castlevania, and I've played Mega Man, right?
Yeah.
Those are, I would say, my main tent poles for these kind of games. Like, even going back and playing stuff like ActRaiser, right? Like, extremely NES and SNES shit all the way down, which just has a very different look and a very different aesthetic.
Yes.
And it's a much more narrow, polished vision. I would say all of those games value above anything else, like, clarity of, like, mechanical intent.
I don't know if I'd say that about ActRaiser, but yes, I know what you mean.
ActRaiser, not so much, but, like, Castlevania, Mega Man, Mario. Yeah. These are games about precise platforming where I know what's
happening.
Oh, you should
play Castlevania Bloodlines. You'd love that. That's a cool game.
The idea of turning Castlevania, which I, like, because at this point where it's, like, Castlevania 3... You know what? I haven't played Super Castlevania 4. That's on the Nintendo, but it is it almost doesn't count in the thing because it's so fucking weird to look at.
Yes.
But like Castlevania 3, leaving off at that point, like those are some of the most precise, incredible action games you can ever play, but in a very capital G good way. They are good design. Yes. They are formally adhering to all the rules in a way that they do start breaking immediately. When
the 16-bit era, if you can call it, you know, I know that's a fuzzy definition, right? But that stuff just kind of dissolves into everyone throwing a bunch of ideas at the wall, right? I don't think anyone makes it out of that unscathed. There's not the same clarity of purpose that there used to be. And I think sometimes for better and sometimes for worse, like, I prefer, like, Mario World to Mario 3 every day of the week. There's no question about it.
Yes.
But I know there's people who go the other way because Mario 3 is, like, just way more, like, precise, and the levels are, like, really short and it's, like, really focused. I'm like, no, give me World. Like, it's different exits and weird puzzle stuff, and prefer that every time. Like, even Nintendo's not immune to this, I think.
No. But I do think it, like, tends towards, like, the history of Nintendo as, like, the polished, good design games, right?
Well, it's weird because, like, partially it's, like, your introduction to a lot of these games has been driven by what the culture remembers, which is Nintendo dominated, and also by, like, what I grew up with, especially early on, which was all Nintendo stuff. I didn't discover Rystar until I played, like, Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection on, like, the GameCube or whatever.
The one with the plus one, the GameCube one?
I played the GameCube one, and then I played the 360 one. I bought both collections. Which had different, they were different releases, but, like, you know, whenever they did the big Sega packs, because I didn't have a Genesis growing up, so it was all new to me, basically. That was my introduction to a lot of Mega Drive games. So part of the reason I wanted to do these two games, is because I don't have any, like, firsthand in the 90s experience with any of this shit. It's all new to me, basically.
Yeah.
I just also, I mean, this is just an era I like more than you do. Not that you dislike it. I'm not saying that or anything. I just, like, man, this is like when games are really interesting to me. I think you skew about 5 years in the other way. Well, I think we actually meet in the late 90s, but then you go a little further than I do, where I'm like early to late 90s. You're like late 90s to early aughts.
Well, yeah, I'd say that, like, my interest for this kind of era is generally PlayStation to PS2.
Yeah, and I would say mine is, like, this early 90s era to PS1, up through, like, Dreamcast, maybe.
Which is just completely lines up with, like, when we were born, I guess.
yeah, probably.
Because, you know, which is funny to me because, like, I wasn't even playing these. Like, my first console was an Xbox. I didn't actually have this growing up, but it has backwards-wise imprinted upon itself that games were the best when I was 10 years old. But I wasn't actually playing the good games when I was 10 years old, so I was playing Xbox.
It's weird because, like, the games I was playing that were often considered the best, like, you know, your fucking Marios and Zeldas, I just don't care to, like, I'm not going to talk about those. They're talked to death. I don't have anything to say, but I want to play these weird things from that same era that I wasn't playing at the time. Mm-hmm. And that's super fascinating to me.
playing games in the 90s, if you were actually plugged in, and also if you were in Japan or could speak Japanese and import things.
Yes.
If you were like 18, had disposable income and the ability to speak Japanese, the 90s must have been like literally getting blasted in the head with a Matrix beam every week. There's something
I mean, this explains like a whole era of guys, of which the only one who's still doing this is like Jeff Gerstmann, right? But there's a lot of those type of guys.
Yes, but he couldn't speak Japanese. But
he was importing a bunch of weird games from Japan at the time.
But like, imagine you play in the same year, right? Like this hypothetical guy that's playing everything from all the countries on release, right? You can play in the same year. You can play fucking this. You can play what's it like? Earthbound is 94, and you play Doom. Those are within like the same few months, right? That's the same time. Those games are all peers. And if you're playing those at the same time, and like, a couple months later, I go and play, I don't know what other, like,
Final Fantasy VI is it Japan in 94?
I was trying to avoid just listing the Square RPGs I did know.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, I'm just like looking at these lists. I'm like, man, Sonic 3 is out that year. Is that this year? Sonic 3. Elder Scrolls Arena, if you got a PC. System Shock also this year.
Right. Like, and very few people were playing all of those because I feel like these were more segmented.
Kingsfield comes out on the Japanese PlayStation 1 this year.
I'm sorting by trending for 1994 on Backlogged. Just to like give a sense of the, and I'm going to skip over something. I'm not going to list all the Nintendo
games. I was looking at Wikipedia. At the end here is like Kingsfield, you know, the original. And it's like, fuck, man. The video games are just in a wild place.
It's like, in addition to Dynamite Headache, we got Earthbound, Super Metroid, Donkey Kong Country, FF6, Sonic 3 and Knuckles, Doom 2, Mega Man 10. Mega Man X. Stupid. I was really.
No, I get how this happens. It's just very funny.
I was reading it out too fast. Anyway, Steven. Castlevania Bloodlines, Wario Land, System Shock, Tekken! Fucking Tekken and Doom 2 in the same year.
Oh, arcade Tekken, yeah, that's this year. Yeah.
Yeah, Kingsfield, Shin Megami Tensei IF, Super Punch Outs.
No, you know what? I'm going to say Shin Megami Tensei IF does not hang here.
Hey, but guess what? The people returning back to the older time who, you know, change what the algorithm prioritizes on Backlog, they're playing Shin Megami Tensei IF more than Virtua Fighter 2, which is two lines below.
Fair enough.
But, like, that's all those things being peers at the time is, like, obviously, one thing, it's true. I know it's true. I know when they came out, right? It doesn't surprise me to hear that these games came out in 1994, but they're just so... They're in different universes.
Yeah.
There's so many different, like, spheres of things happening, and imagining someone who was actually, like, plugged into all of it in the way that, like, someone on Game Twitter now might be, your world would be changing constantly. Crazy.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Like people have never gotten over it.
And people say, like, oh, 2017, one of the best years in video games. Like, like, oh, we had Breath of the Wild. There was, like, Japanese games return with Yakuza and Nier happening. There's Monster Hunter World in there. I think that might have been 28. But, like, you know, when people talk about recent years, they're like, oh, so many cool games. You just need to look at an average year of the 90s. You don't even need to look at the big hitters. Just look at, like, the average week-to-week things that are happening in disparate spaces across multiple different... sub areas of production, because the largest size of production is like 30 people at 94.
Yeah.
Maybe a little larger for Nintendo or have you. Like, you know, Blockbuster's a starting point.
I have no idea. I guess I don't know. Nintendo doesn't really talk that much about it, right?
I know that, like, Final Fantasy VII is like 100 people, right?
Yeah.
So, and one is like 8 people. So there's a exponential curve throughout that decade of growth.
Yeah.
But that's just my reference point for it. I don't know, like, across the board. But it does mean there's just so many more things, and they all just released alongside each other. Different world.
I'm just going to read the highest selling games of 1994 for the UK, because it's very funny.
Oh, for the UK? Okay.
For the
Sensible
UK.
World of Soccer.
This is actually by month. It's not a top 10. It's by month for some reason. January, Sensible Soccer for the Mega Drive. February, SimCity 2000. March, NBA Jam, which is a multi-platform release, obviously. April's Doom. May is World Cup Striker. June is World Cup USA 94. July is Star Wars TIE Fighter. August is Super Street Fighter 4. September is Mortal Kombat 2. October is Doom 2. And then November and December, both FIFA 95.
Even back in the 90s, yearly sports games were what the people craved.
They want the football.
They want footy.
Is there a single sports game? Actually, fourth in Japan is J-League Excite Stage 94. So, yes, that is a football game.
The J-League's big enough? I guess the J-League came out the gate pretty strong. Yes.
Also known as Capcom Soccer Shootout, I guess, in other regions.
I don't know what the video game situation was for sports games. Those games are weird because there were so many of them. They were huge sellers, but no one's going back and playing old sports games.
Some people are. There's people who do. Don't say no one is.
Well, not no one, but like there are a few classics that get held up, but there's a sea of the, I assume, are totally fine, okay sports games that aren't being visited. Like, if you're not like Tecmo Bowl or NBA Jam or like.
Well, it's the ones that you personally have nostalgia for. A couple classics that just like any. I think anyone anywhere could play Neo Turf Masters and have a good time. That's one of the greatest games ever made. That's right.
Indisputable, I feel like. Neo Turf Mudders. That's a classic.
Yeah. And then there's like a couple that people held up as like, oh, this is the one to get for the. Like, if you want to play a late 90s football game, this is the one you want.
Yeah. So there's a couple. Rise, yes, you're right. It's also the one that when you were a kid, you played. That's the other one you want to play. Yeah. But those are the three pillars of that.
Yeah. It's weird because I think some sports get this worse than others. Like, I think most golf games that like, you could approach and go play because they're not really about, like, the rosters or anything. I think driving games, like, bad ones are almost more interesting than good ones sometimes.
Especially, like, early 3D driving games.
Yeah, but no one gives a shit about, like, football games like this. Maybe they do.
They do, but in different ways. Like, people will be going back and playing, like, Pro Evo on the PS2. Because we love Pro Evo.
Hacking in your modern rosters. Oh, they love I'm sure someone's doing that.
They are absolutely hacking in modern rosters every year to Pro Evo 6.
That and wrestling games.
yes. Oldest time.
Yeah. Do you want to move on to our other game?
Yeah, now we've just reminisced about the 90s. Let's talk about the other side of the 90s, when things are just kind of mid.
Also 1994, a couple months later, 95 in other regions, is the story of Thor, known in the West, is North America as Beyond Oasis, a Mega Drive game developed by Ancient, which is Yuzo Koshiro's development studio. You know, famous Yuzo Koshiro, of the guy who makes the music, still it does. I mean, Ancient's been around as long as he's been doing stuff. He did not do the music on this, he's just the producer.
No, he did do the music on this. What are you talking about?
Really? It's listed. Oh, yes. Sorry. I looked at writer for some reason and read it as composer. I
got it says when you load
it
up.
It sounds like Yuzo Koshiro also. I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's like, I'm like, oh, this is the East soundtrack again.
Yes. I think it's really funny. It's called The Story of Thor. Cause I'm like, what about this looks like Thor?
Well, Thor's the world. Thor's like the world.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay. Sure, but when you say Thor, I think Norse mythology, and then a guy with a turban shows up, and I'm like, what are we doing here?
Well, Thor's the world where the ancient. Okay, did you play the American game Beyond Oasis, or did you play Beyond Oasis retranslated CD-ROM at
standard? No, I played the American game Beyond Oasis.
Okay, so you didn't. So they cut out the bit from the opening prologue where they explain what Thor is.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
And you played as Prince Ali and not Leo.
Yes. Yeah, Prince Ali, which made sense because everything is like Arabian themed.
That's why they renamed it to Prince Ali, which is not true in the video game The Story of Thor. Yeah. I just thought we were downloading the translated versions.
No. I literally played the North American release of this. So.
I don't think there's that many differences, but the names have changed and like they are more explicit about like the only bit I could directly compare was the opening thing, but the explain like. Thor is it's like an alien world where the two guys come from that clashed, and when they're
One's got a silver armlet, one has a gold armlet. I'm like, man, anime has not changed once.
And when they hit each other, they cancel each other out and fell to the new world.
And everyone makes fart noises because it's like this again every time,
every fucking time. That's the plot of the game. The only difference is they localize out like. And they just localize out the phrasing. This is the thing I find funny, in that there is some anime-ass phrasing that I feel like has just become more common that used to get localized out. Like, when you pick up the amulet in the American version, it's like, you have been chosen as the hero to fight for the golden thing. And when you pick it up in the Japanese version, it's like, you have inherited my will. And I'm like, yes, I know I have because it's an anime game.
You're right. Absolutely. This is an anime staple phrasing.
The thing is the same, but I'm like, oh, now they would just say that. Everyone knows anime when you're talking about these concepts.
Yes.
But yeah, so this game is about Prince Ali slash Luo, I guess, who has found the gold armlet in a little cave, and someone else has found the silver armlet, and the silver armlet is descended from the evil spirit Agito, and you're fighting for the good spirit.
We're Agito.
Yeah, we're Agito over here. You have to do Tempest Finis and stop the time loop. And the game is like, you go back to your home castle from the like town you started out in, and you have to gather the four spirits to fight the wielder of the silver armlets to save the day. A couple of things happen along the way. He kidnaps your sister. You find your other long lost sister, who is obviously 100% obviously the wielder of the silver armlets. You go into the world between worlds where all things converge, and you defeat Agito and have unbrainwashed your sister from the influence of the silver armlet. And then she's like, I've done too much murder. I have to die now, and pushes you out to the end credits while sacrificing herself for no purpose or reason as the credits roll. And then I laugh a lot.
Yes.
Because it's doing peak anime melodrama, but it's just the silliest, emptiest thing in the world.
You know what? I guess I don't really remember the end. I thought it was more like she's going to stay with the silver armlet and like protect it.
I thought that whole world was like collapsing, like because it was.
I thought it was more like I'm going to be the guardian of this thing so it never falls in the hands of evil again.
I guess she could be doing that, but she doesn't come back with you to your home. She does stay behind. I guess she could
With
be
with all your like animal spirits.
Yes, my spirit of fire, and my spirit of ice, fire, darkness, and plants. Those are the four elements.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny. And yeah, so it's very, very, I would say, pretty simple story, pretty traditional in its anime story stuff. But it did make me think, and it's a thing I thought when I played the game that I thought of a lot playing this, which is, you know, East 1 and 2 specifically, which is, these games, anime RPGs have not changed in their level of we are doing the anime plots, but perfunctorily, but now they have about 1 million times more words.
Yes, that's true.
Now, in this, it's just like a couple of lines in a bit of dialogue while a really good Yuzo Koshiro song plays. Can we just bring that level of storytelling back to video games, please? I don't need any more.
Yeah, that's fair. So this game is weird because I played this a little bit when Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection came out for the 360. And that had a bunch of games, like I said, that had a bunch of games on it. And I played exactly enough of this to unlock the one achievement associated with it, because every game on that collection had an achievement, but I was like, this is like a fake Zelda clone, and then dropped it immediately.
So this was your era of truly still being Nintendo-pilled.
Yes. I was like, why don't I want to play this shitty Zelda with like a Arabian Nights theme? Like, that sounds dumb.
Here's the thing. Having played it, it is kind of a shitty Zelda.
With an Arabian Nights theme. Yes, that's correct.
That is not an incorrect assessment. So when I first played this, I was like, Dynamite Headdy is a much more impressive game. Much more interesting, cohesive, all the like good adjectives. This is a kind of crappy Zelda clone, but I do love action-adventure games. I like when I see the red door and then I find the red key. In this case, the red key is a blue... The water that can, you know, disperse the fire. You know, you get your water spirit and then you can cross fire.
Don't worry, there's plenty of colored keys also.
Yes.
The thing with this, so it's weird because it's like... The you go, there's like a small overworld and there's dungeons, and at the end of the dungeon you get like a guy sometimes that helps you unlock the, you know, the next door to the next dungeon as the story progresses, kind of like Zelda. You get new powers that help you solve puzzles in the dungeons, but the combat itself is like way more of like a beat 'em up, in that enemies just like swarm the screen. They all have like health bars on screen, and your attacks are all like direction and input combos.
Yes.
You know, Link's just got a sword. This has like, there's charge, there's jump, there's crouch, there's like run at a guy, there's like do a 3-hit combo close, there's like do a 3-hit combo far, there's like a charge combo. There's like a lot happening.
There's so many mechanics in the fighting, and they don't really change much because it's not like, oh, I can synergize this into action game combo stuff. It's pure beat 'em up style.
Yes.
Three hit combos to throw a guy out the way to get the next guy, right?
Yes, especially an hour in when you're like, oh, there's like four enemy types and they just got different colors and they just like march in on screen like you're playing Streets of Rage and then you fight 20 guys. I'm like, right, beat 'em ups, but in a Zelda game.
So the first hour of this game I thought was fantastic. Like went to the right and then I found a bunch of things that I couldn't progress and I went to the left and went back home and then I was sent out on my journey and then I was able to
thank you map for showing me exactly where to go at all times.
I didn't click the map until I'd already been to the right.
Okay.
But it was just enough of like I can see the possibilities and then I see the abilities I get and then I progress through them and then I get to the dungeon. The dungeon's like 10 minutes long and then I get a new thing and then progress on to the next thing. I was like, this is great. We're moving at a great clip. I'm moving through the world. I'm solving overworlds, like location-based puzzles to get me to the next dungeon. Things are happening. That was about the first hour of the game. And then the next hour of the game happened and it was still that, and but just a bit more fighting. And the next hour happened, it was even more that and a bit more fighting. And it started introducing the worst platforming that's ever been put in a video game. And it just kind of petered out. It never got, like, terrible, but it was just the one thing it was, which was immediately, like, impressive, and I saw the appeal of it. But then I just kept doing the same combos on the same guys in the same but longer and more tedious dungeons. And it eventually, by the end of the game, I was so fucking sick of this video game. Not in a bad way, but it reminded me a lot of Everything or Nothing, which we, you know, a decade later, but has a similar thing of you immediately see what's cool about the game, but then they had to make 6 hours of it, and the rest end of, like, last two are bad. That's just the story of video games to me.
Yes. It's weird because, like, the thing with, like, that really sets us apart from Zelda also, beyond just the combat being different, is there's no puzzles in the way I think of, like, a puzzle design. Which is like a really slick, like, Nintendo, understand the environment, use your skills to, like, do it. There's, like, multiple switch puzzles in this game, but as far as I can tell, they're literally all trial and error. There's no, like, way to discern the answer from an environment or anything. It's just, like, hit the switches until a secret door opens, or don't, I guess. There's tons of enemy drops, but they're all, like, food or weapons, and the weapons all have degradation on them. And then there's, like, a weird hidden level-up system, but, like, I checked a guide, and the guide suggested that you don't want to level up. I don't know why. Is there a different ending if you beat the game at level one? I didn't actually figure this out.
I didn't understand the nuances of the system.
Because it implied that I just looked at Game of Thrones guide to make sure about an hour and a half of the game that I wasn't missing something. Like, is there like a level of complexity of this game I wasn't really aware of?
I don't think so.
No, the answer is no. But it did mention it was like, oh, you get these level ups. Like that, I was like, what are the hearts? So that's the level up. It kind of increased your health a little bit. But they're like, don't grab too many because your ending depends on how many you get. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. And I never did find out.
Me neither. I don't know what that's talking about. I was also looking stuff up with this game, and it's of the era and popularity where there is stuff written about it, but not fact-checked or with a vigorous fandom enough for me to trust much of it.
Yeah.
It
helped me find the infinite crossbow, which is great. Helped me out a lot. But it also, by the time I got to, oh, there's an infinite sword too, I was like, I don't really care.
Oh, because you didn't do the 100 floor dungeon that you need to do the infinite sword? Second you find out that's a 100 floor dungeon, you're like, well, not doing that.
Getting the infinite crossbow is like a little racetrack that's very easy. You do that in like 3 minutes.
Yes, that one's not too bad. But the infinite sword is at the end, like, they put a big secret 100 floor dungeon in the middle of the woods and you go find it and it's like, oh god, it takes forever and all the fighting is the same. I just didn't like the combat in this game. I thought the combat was tiresome. It dragged everything down.
I mean, I think it's neat, like, in a short game. Like, if this game was 90 minutes long, if this was Streets of Rage 2, it'd be one of the greatest games ever made.
I need to play Streets of Rage 2. It's a big thing I'm missing, like, because I've played a few of those beat-em-ups, but I've mostly, when I think about the games I've played, I've, like, played a lot of Newgrounds games that were inspired by them at the time.
Here's the thing about beat-em-ups for me is that it's not a genre I actually have that much affection for. Mm-hmm. They're just a vibe, right? Because you're on an emulator or something, you free play it, you infinite play it, and you just kind of grind it out and you see all the levels and all the bosses and you enjoy the music and then you're done. And it's like, was everything interesting to my eyes? If so, it's a good game. If not, it was a bad game.
Yeah. And so because I'm like action gamer, right? Ninja Gaiden fan.
Yeah.
I've always come in and I'm like, yes, I do the three hit combo, and they slowly fly back across the screen and they walk at me again and I do the three hit combo again.
Unfortunately, there's no way to fix that.
And I'm like, oh, what if we put that in Zelda? What if the combat in Zelda sucked? I'm like, well, that would be a terrible idea. Why would you do that? Which is a shame because, like, that's a part I'm very negative on, and think it kind of like
I love to Sunlock an ogre, though, is the thing. I love when I do that.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily think it completely ruined the game. I still enjoyed going around the places. I definitely enjoyed the early dungeons when I wasn't just going back and forth between a million rooms to open every door.
There's a bit, like, two-thirds of the game, where you're, like, up on the mountain and the wind starts blowing, which I thought was hilariously, like, just the pain in the ass. That's when the game trolls you with, like, the awful wind and, like, the enemies are blowing past you and there's all these spikes. I couldn't help but laugh. I love shit like that.
This is just a thing that is, like, out of video games now. They're too big. Too many people are online. Too many people complain. You don't have the part where you're playing a video game and you can just tell that the people playing it are fucking with you. I mean, the only legacy of this is, like, I guess the Dark Souls stuff. But even then, I would say, like, it's become so aestheticized and part of the brand. You know those poison swamps, right?
Yes.
It doesn't have the same hit of this normal video game that I was playing suddenly just decides to fuck with me for 5 minutes because it's made by people and I can feel their hand.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. The difference is, like, when the wind blows the enemies past me and there's, like, 8,000 spikes, I think that's really funny. When I go into the moving platforms room with all the whiz robes I have to destroy, I'm like, did nobody play this? Did they just forget what video games were when they made this awful horse shit?
This is how you see the joy of, like, the angry video game nerd is born in your heart.
Yes, exactly. It's weird because, like, I don't know if you've actually talked about this on a podcast before. This is a thing that I believe. Like, the weird thing about angry video game nerd is someone who, like, watched a lot of his early videos. I haven't watched him in years, but, like, early stuff before YouTube was even big, I watched a lot of his stuff. It was never supposed to be, this is criticism about good games versus bad games. It was, you played all this shit too when you were a kid, and the same stuff annoyed the fuck out of you, and it's nice to have someone remember a game that you barely remember, and point out all the stupid shit that you thought was annoying back then is still annoying now, and it's, like, fun, and you have fond memories of it. But then I see people who, like, are younger than me, who watch it, like, oh, obviously all these games are bad. I'm like, no, he loves these games. What are you talking about? This is the only complaints you can have of a game you love.
Yes. It's
the Beyond Oasis volcano fucking platform room is a nightmare that I hate, but, like, I'm always going to be fond of it because I played the video game.
It's the way I'm fucking talking about Ghostfish, right?
Like, yes, exactly.
There's always some bullshit in a video game. And when you're playing 90s games, that's just, like, the truth.
I'm going to be honest. When I got to the Ghostfish, I was like, this isn't as bad as Jackson's made it out to be.
No, but you can see how it, like, gets a similar impulse absolutely. In the player.
Yeah.
But, like, that just kind of goes out of video games, and then you get a new audience where, like, because games have become more polished, that sensation is, like, so negatively, like, I don't even know if it's, like, a change in the audience on that. I think it might just be being online. I think that's a big point of it, is, like, people's momentary annoyance can spread. Like, okay, everyone complaining about Dragon Plague in Dragon's Dogma 2. That's a normal, valid reaction. You're meant to complain about it. You're meant to be pissed off.
It's supposed to be annoying, right?
But, like, on some level, that's the video game. The video game has brought you together by increasing your sense of all being pissed off at this thing. The thing I'm thinking of is going down the Phazon Mines in Metro Prime 1.
Oh, God. Pain in the ass.
There's one segment,
you wouldn't want to take it out.
Yeah, there's one segment where there's, like, 30 rooms, no checkpoint, and I just kept dying.
It's the hardest part of the game.
It's fucking hard, and I was like, this is the worst game ever made. I can't put Citizen Kane in video games, my dick. Fuck off. I hate you so much. And I'm Googling, and I'm like, in this moment, I am Googling, how do I, like, is there a checkpoint? Is there something I've missed? Surely they couldn't have designed a video game this bad.
20 years of people giving out about this whole sequence.
And then, like, I Google it, and I find NeoSeeker threads from 2001 of people complaining about this, and I'm no longer mad. I just feel the oneness of all things as I am connected across time of people being pissed off the video game.
Also, the good thing about that, especially one of the reasons Metroid Prime is great and Beyond Oasis doesn't have this sequence, is I guess it does a little bit because you leave that room with the grappling hook that lets you go down the other way. You get through the Phazon Mines, you get all your equipment, and then the next time you go through the Phazon Mines, it doesn't matter. You're like, it's trivialized. It's fucking sick as hell.
Yes, you really do, because of the power upgrades you get in Metroid Prime. This isn't long enough to have. I mean, you don't have any upgrades. This is another thing I was thinking. Well, playing Beyond Oasis is. So I was thinking of Isolot, right? Which is another action-adventure game. It's obviously more, more Zelda-y because...
Yes, but also Is one of the greatest games ever made, so...
But I just think if you're making a game like this, and this is just a personal thing, I understand if you're like, I want to be dodging moves and doing combos. Like, they completely get going the other way. But I'm like, what if instead of that, I just bumped into guys until my number was bigger? And then
the number bigger here doesn't mean anything. Like, it gives you a little more health, but, like, leveling up is not important that much in this game.
I just was like, I felt like there was an RPG missing. Like, I was like, am I not getting XP by killing guys? And is that just me being old? Is that just, like, the RPGification of all video games? Like, everything has some kind of extrinsic progression to it?
I think a little bit.
I think it's a little bit of that, but I also think it's playing in a similar space to RPGs at the time. And it just doesn't
Well, here's the thing about, like, especially Zelda, is by the end of the game, you don't, it's not that you have that many more skills to defeat random enemies in Zelda, you just have so many hearts, it doesn't matter.
Well, Zelda's fundamentally different to this, in that Zelda, you don't fight enemies, ever. You ignore them entirely on the overworld.
Ideally, there's no reason to fight most guys.
You ignore them entirely on the overworld, right? Basically, after the first 5 minutes. And when you fight them in dungeons, it's because a room has been set up with a challenge. Those enemies are handcrafted into an encounter that is, like, interesting in some form. I would say that everything post Link to the Past kind of follows these ideas. This isn't that. This is just you are just going to fight the same five guys over and over and over again.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, plenty of games are like that, too. Which is, like, not... It's weird because, like, you're not even that, like, you know, negative about it. You enjoyed the video game, but I feel like I'm like, I want to defend it, but it doesn't really need defending. It's fine. And also, I thought it was like, I think I gave Dynamo Heady like 4 stars on backlog, and I think gave this 3. Like, it's a fond 3, but it's a 3.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm only more negative because I think I like the action adventure game stuff more, but like,
yes.
They were making, like, you can go play Secret of Mana. It's the same game. You just level up. You know.
Yeah, I didn't really like Secret of Mana. I like this more than Secret of Mana.
I've played some Adventure of Mana, the first one.
Love Adventure of Mana. Adventure of Mana fucking rules.
But I'm just saying,
you mean Final Fantasy Adventure?
No, I mean Adventure of Mana on the Vita.
Oh, I played Final Fantasy Adventure on the Game Boy, one of the coolest games ever made.
But I'm just saying, these kind of games, like, they had RPG mechanics, a lot of them. This one just kind of doesn't. I'm looking at the reception section on Wikipedia, and GamePro commented this game is definitely not for hardcore RPGers.
That's correct.
Due to its small world, limited challenge, and greater emphasis on hack and slash combat and puzzle solving than RPG elements. But it would be a good game for players new to the RPG genre.
The thing with... the challenge is, like, outside of the platformers, which are pains in the ass, it's mostly just, like, density of enemies that's the problem, because sometimes you'll just get swarmed, like, fuck, I don't want to fight all these guys. And there's no, because the areas are so cramped, it's hard to, like, you can't just avoid guys in the overworld, a lot of times, you just have to fight through them.
Yes, I mean, you're always sprinting and then doing the sprint attack. I mean, like, if I can get three guys with a sprint attack, then I can clear my path.
Because the game has a, rotoscoped is not the right term, but it just has this, like, almost like animated art style, like big sprites with, like, lots of especially Prince Ali, just a lot of, like, movement frames that to me, like, evokes, like, I had two reactions. I was like, this looks like a GBA game because of the size of the sprites. I thought of Minish Cap specifically, which is playing this game. I was like, Jackson, you should play Minish Cap.
I clearly should. I mean,
that might be the Zelda game I think you'd most like at this point.
Well, my favorite one is Link's Awakening, so yeah.
Yes. But it also reminded me of like cell phone games, like pre-smartphone.
I can see that.
With like just that kind of like weirdly, like not quite cel-shaded, but like kind of illustrative big sprites, right?
I mean, the thing for me was I didn't even realize I could double tap to sprint for the first like 20 minutes.
Oh yeah. I immediately was like checking my move. I mean, I read the fucking manual like you're supposed to do with every game from before the year 2000.
I didn't. I thought I probably should look at the manual, but then it ended up being mostly okay. It was just that took me a while to figure out. I was like, is there seriously not a sprint button? They're genuinely not a sprint button. But because I'm a post 2000s pilled, forgot that like double tapping was a, you know, there wasn't that many buttons. You're gonna double tap, you
That's
go faster.
The default sprint in a
literally the default sprint in like games of this era. I'm just a baby. But that meant I spent the first 20 minutes getting very familiar with his ridiculous walk cycle.
Yes. Yes. What's really weird is the sprint has like, it's got the Zelda thing where you can't change direction once you're sprinting. It also has like this huge like sliding wind down when you stop sprinting, where he like plants his feet and like slides a whole like body length of time.
Yes.
It's just it's very goofy to me. I was like, you're not Prince of Persia. Like, knock it off.
But disappointed.
Not unfondly. Like I said, I thought this game was like charming. It's like rough. I don't love it, but I'm glad I actually sat there and played the whole thing.
Yeah. I definitely had a good time, especially with the first bit. And then as it went on, I became more and more annoyed, and just thought, just kind of laughed at how games used to always suck for their last few hours. Not again. Yes. This is literally the theme of our episode about the James Bond game, with you being like, "It didn't happen to me. I was playing Nintendo games.
Nintendo games, which usually were incredible throughout, because the Nintendo expects you to fucking finish the video game, but no one else did.
Like, that's true of, you know, Dynamite Heady, constantly great throughout, right?
Yeah.
You can go play. You know, most of the Square RPGs that we play from this era are also good, but these are like the fucking classics, right? When you're renting a video game, you go rent Beyond Oasis. They want you to make sure the first bit's fucking good. That's their main thing, and then
but heaven help you if you want to complete it.
Yeah, you just got to make it long enough that people won't be mad.
It's weird because, like, Japan didn't necessarily do this that much because renting was not I don't think game rentals were like a big of a thing in Japan at all.
Okay.
My brain wants to say that it wasn't even a thing, like it might have been illegal, but I don't know if that's true or not. Or just
I think
I
there was
the
like some back and forth, like idea. Like, I think they wanted to make it illegal or something, but I don't know exactly. Okay.
I guess I can just Google this. But I know in America, game rentals are illegal in Japan.
Game rentals have been illegal for 25 years? That's crazy.
From that article's from 2012 also.
Yeah, that's a 14.
Yeah, in 1984, they lobbied and changed the Japanese Copyright Act. Video game rental was banned in Japan.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
Because they didn't want the same thing that happened to, like, anime beta tapes to happen to video games.
I was literally just watching a video the other day about how they tried to do this in Japan with, like, mini discs and failed.
Yeah.
Because the Japanese copyright industry is so much more teeth out than anywhere else.
Yes.
Somehow. It's bad everywhere, but man. Ooh.
Yeah. But America, rental was, like, the main way I mean, it's also, especially, like, as a child, like, you know, I was born in 85, and so, like, Japan's in the middle of the bubble economy while America's in the middle of a recession, like, you fucking rented games because it's too expensive to buy new games all the time.
Yeah. Even I was still renting games, and, like, I would say up through about 2006 was when I was like, that's kind of full enough now. But yeah. I remember, you know, in 2004, I was renting Jet Set Radio Future and playing that, and would go to Blockbusters regularly to rent new video games.
Mm-hmm.
I would borrow some video games from the library. The library I had a copy of KOTOR, and that's how I first played that, and I played it for, like, you know, I didn't even get off Taris because I rented it from the library. And it's KOTOR, and I'm 10.
If you would like to send questions, you can send them to abnormalmappingpodcast@gmail.com. They can be about the games we're covering for Game Club, or they can be about anything else. We've got questions all over the gambit here. First one's from Rosa, which I think came in right after we recorded our last episode.
Yeah, there's always a couple that tag like that.
Yeah, I think there's two this month. We all know some RPGs that have Yggdrasil as a foundational element to its world or story or whatever, but it's far from being the only piece of mythology or religious esoterica that shows up in both textual and thematic levels of the genre space. Unfortunately, I find it to be overwhelmingly shallow or hollow affairs when they do crop up. This suggests to me that the games are largely uninterested in it other than window dressing. What do games get out of going to this well if it comes out of something they don't seem to care that much about? It's free real estate is the actual answer. Is you don't have to. Wizards of the Coast might care if you steal all of their, I mean, not in Japan, they want to guess, but if you need guys to populate your RPG enemies, you just steal from mythology. No one can sue you for mythology.
That's true. It's like a common reference point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So like, it's something everyone knows what kind of what it is. If you see a Minotaur, you know what its deal is, right? You see, but also it's just like stuff that's in the culture. Like there's so many, like from Evangelion to Final Fantasy Tactics, the Dead Sea Scrolls were a big cultural icon of the, of like 90s religious esoterica. Shows up abstracted in both those pieces of media, right? It's just what's in the culture. People care about, oh, we found secret religious texts.
And then you look up like some other stuff about what was like getting pop religious popular in Japan at the time. And you go, guys.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Guys, what the fuck are you doing over there?
Yeah, I think it's just like stuff that's in the culture. And also it's easy touchstones for everyone to like a shorthand for what everyone knows what you're talking about. Right.
Yeah. I think it's just like, you know, these we have similar touchstones in American culture that are equally invisible, right? Like,
yeah,
things just that are referenced in big end of the world stories. They're easy to get to.
Yeah. Yeah,
I do think it is a little strange how constantly the same they are. Like these same pulls happen all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
I would just like a little more breadth. But it is what it is. The industry, it's built like when we say it's built out of anime, it's because like a lot of them are fans. But it's also like a lot of the same writers. There's a crossover there, right? There's a lot of
pull. But it's not like Western games are immune to this too. Like, or even media. Like, how much Atlantis or ancient Norse technological bullshit exists in all of like pop media?
Well, yeah, but even more than that, I'm like, a lot of American games now feel like the movies and TV that everyone's annoyed at because those are the same writers, right? It depends about where the like cultural pool of talent is coming from, and it's coming from a lot of the same places.
Yeah.
And America has our own version of that, and it's guys going, whoa, did you see what I just did just there? Whoa, I flipped that guy with my mind.
Yeah.
But that's just like, you know, industries are made in places which have their own cultures and form norms over time. I don't think that's like necessarily good or bad. It just happens. Some will be more to some people's taste than others, right? I don't think... I prefer anime in the thing that I enjoy, but I'm not going to hear and be like, when two guys have a rivalry and then fight each other, that's inherently better than when a guy says a quippy thing, right? That's one of them, just the taste I like more. It would be elitist of me to say that's like inherently better. They're the same thing on some level. They're not like, you know, elementally different. They're just different tastes.
It's weird to me because like the past year has me going, I think I like anime and video games way more than I like anime and anime.
Is that because in video games that you are playing a video game?
Yeah.
Because there's like stuff going on between the anime scenes.
Yeah. And I'm not saying like in my shows and movies, I'd rather the Western thing. I'd rather neither. I'd rather watch a good thing. Probably from the 60s or 70s.
Well, yeah, this is specifically saying like I am an adult and I don't necessarily want to only watch media made for 13-year-olds in Japan.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a question of like intent and demographic.
Yes.
This is like playing Disco Elysium and going, why aren't video games for adults?
Yeah. But like, it makes me so much less mad when the RPG is about the friends band together defeat the darkness than when I watch like a 50 episode show that ends on the exact same thing. I'm like, well, you just waste all my time.
That's true.
But when Dragon Quest does, I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go.
I wish I could know the fundamental difference between these two things as well. I think it's just that an RPG, by its very nature, inherently, is about characters in a place interacting with each other. So it places so much more weight on the moment-to-moment hanging out stuff. Yeah. Or at least it can
do. Which anime can do also. Like, I'm not saying all anime is bad when it does this, right?
No, but like I think that was more common when you had 50-episode episodic anime and not 12-episode get... Like, this is the like, oh, the bit where the plot is introduced in anime is the bit that people like the least because they like the hangout show. Everyone like the episodic hangout stuff better because it's about the characters more.
Yeah.
That's just the universal thing with like people engaging with this kind of media.
Yeah.
Okay.
Emil writes in talking about Square saying they're going to pivot away from mid-tier games for only AAA projects. I just wanted to know our thoughts on this. What do we think the future of Square Enix is?
I mean, the same, but they're not going to release 7 video games every year.
Here's the thing is, I think on some level they're kind of full of shit, because they say this all the time, and it's not like they ever actually stop. That Square Enix does not, what Square Enix says they're going to do and what Square Enix does has never aligned.
They're not full of shit. They're absolutely going to do this. The thing is,
Emil lists a bunch of games, and there's stuff like Live Alive Remake and Star Ocean in here, and I'm like, they're going to keep making Octopaths and Live Alive Remake style games. Those games sold really well, actually.
This is
now,
some
now your fucking Diofield Chronicles or your
Harvestellas.
Those are gone.
They are completely gone. So here's the thing, as far as I understand it from like reading the articles, from talking to people, is that Square's production line is heavily producer driven. The producers have their own little fiefdoms and they greenlight their projects and they make their projects. And the lack of communication is the thing that the CEO keeps going out and being like, I want to have a thing where I say, you're making this, you're making this, you're working together and making this, and then they all release video games, is theoretically the change they want to make. And having it be less different, like, silos. And I don't just mean the, like, the CBU1, CBU3 stuff. I mean, like, Asano is making the H2D games, right? But then Kawazu is making the Saga games, and the Mana guy is making the Mana games, and they want to like bring those in line, because the projects that get greenlit at Square are not the ones that the market necessarily wants. It's usually what the producers want to make. Like, they keep putting Saga games out because Kawazu's there and he's the Saga guy, but there are more popular game that they haven't revisited that would sell more, just the producers haven't lined up, so it hasn't been greenlit. I think it will go to a much more like, the spreadsheet says that they want to make this game, make this fucking video game, I think is the direction it'll move towards. Which I think it already has the last 20 years. I think the Final Fantasy VII Remake is one of those, and they're trapped in it for hell, making it 15 years. But I think that will be the shift, and I do think like the Diofield Chronicles are just wiped off the face of the earth. Which is a shame. I do think it'll be a bummer, but, you know, I don't know how much you'll be able to tell is different, because I think that so much of the last year of literally everyone getting fired is going to have such a crazy... There aren't going to be any video games in 2026. Like, you're going to feel the ramifications for this across everyone, that I don't know how much Square will stick out. Well, you won't care. I mean, you care abstractly about... You care about the people, right? We care about the people being laid off.
But like, it's not going to change my gaming habits at all.
No. There are definitely some people whose reaction to like these like horrific layoffs, like, oh no, my toys, right? Like,
yeah.
But the problem is that there's people. There's people that need to find jobs and their lives have been ruined.
Yeah.
The toys are so irrelevant to my concern.
Yeah. Aiden asks, my formative experience with the Genesis games came from playing them on a battery-powered plug-and-play emulator. Played a lot of Sonic and Golden Axe that way. In retrospect, I like that I got to play those with a replica Genesis controller. I say I played both these games with my actual Mega Drive controller plugged on my Mister. It's great. Three-button Genesis pad, big fan. Did you use any of those plug-and-play games? They're kind of a little after my time as, like, a kid. And then later, like, it was the collections that I was interested in, even though the collections were kind of pieces of shit. I wish we got the kind of collections that Japan was getting, which were really nice. We've got very few of those over time.
Yeah, the collection situation's bad. But also, like, I don't want any collections in video games anymore.
It's weird now because, like, I have so many pathways to this. But, like, Dynamite Heady, there's, like, a Japan release for the PS2 that's, like, Sega 2500 collection. It's called like Gunstar Heroes collection. It's Dynamite Heady, Gunstar Heroes, and one of the other Treasure Mega Drive games. And it's like, those are like really nice collections. There's like dozens of them. They got all the versions of the games. They got like, but they're all in Japanese, right? None of those came out over here. There's a golden era of Japanese collections that exist mostly on the PS1 and PS2 that just didn't come out over here. Because when you come out over here, you need to put 40 games on a game that you're selling for $40 instead of 3 games on a game you're selling for like 400,000 yen.
The part where like it's Japan, so you can print fucking discs like crazy and sell them.
Yeah,
man. PS2 in Japan was going nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the difference is that like none of those had great emulation. Like the way,
yeah, this is the other thing about the Sega or the PS2 and PS1, because they only put 3 games on the disc. They do a lot of that was where what's the company that did the 3D? Yeah, that's where they cut their teeth on a lot of stuff.
Okay, if you're getting like an M2 one, then maybe yes. I'm in, right? But it depends what like work's being done on the version. Yeah. I would say for 90% of releases, I can do it better with just like setting up EmuDeck.
Well, yeah, because like the Dynamite Heady one, like I was reading up on it like this morning, it was like that PS2 version has every region's release of Dynamite Heady, all emulated, and you know it comes with all the Gunstar Hero versions, and it's all there. But you're paying full price for three old games, right? You the Western market doesn't support paying that much for old media, and that's why our versions are worse.
I mean, even like when the Pixel Remasters came out, where people were like, "You're gonna pay $20 for Final Fantasy 16?" Like, yeah, Final Fantasy 6, yes. Yes. Are you saying it's not worth it? Like,
and that's fundamentally a new game. Like the Pixel Remasters are new video games.
They're less new video games than they want you to believe. They cut some.
Yeah, but
there.
Like you know, it's not like I'm paying for a SNES at ROM.
Right.
That's just not what those are.
And I would have preferred them to go like you know. Yes. I would have preferred to pay $40 for fucking Final Fantasy VI that has a really nicely preserved version of all the versions of the game, right?
Yes.
But
yes.
Like you say,
the SNES
Western
version, the GBA version, this new version, maybe a version of the SNES version that fixes all the bugs in the SNES version, because the SNES version is a unstable piece of shit a lot of ways.
Yeah, like, if you wanted to do the I would pay for the games that I enjoy, like, a lot.
But I don't think that's actually most people, especially in the Western market. No, like, people don't give a shit.
And if they are, like, saying them to people like that, it's like the Live Alive game where they've literally made a new, like, you know, the Dragon Quest III.
Yeah, that's fully a new game. Way more than the Pixel Remasters.
Star Ocean 2, stuff like that. Yeah. Right? Like,
those are new video games.
Are fully new video games. But the idea of, like, the thing I want is I would love for, like, the Criterion Collection releases of old games to be a, like, viable market. But
That is what the PlayStation was cooking with in Japan in those eras.
The West wouldn't allow it. They just wouldn't buy them.
Yeah.
They just straight up would not spend any money on them. And so they don't.
I mean, you get a little bit of that with like Digital Eclipse's doing their best. I like the releases. I buy all of them.
That's true.
I haven't really talked about it on a podcast, but I bought like the what's his face collection? Why can't I think of his name?
Jeff Minter.
Lamasoft guy. Yeah, the Jeff Minter collection. A bunch of his early games. Most of them are like garbage tape games. You know, they're ripoffs of Centipede, but like it's fun to look at the history of that stuff.
Yeah. They are literally doing Criterion Collection for video games.
They're like the only ones. And they're really like the scope is so small compared to what could exist, right?
Well, the scope is so small, but also the things they're doing are so intense to like justify the value. They're doing so much interview work.
Yes. Yeah.
That would not be my expectation for buying like the $40 version of Final Fantasy 2, right?
Yeah.
But I would like to see the $40 version of Final Fantasy 2 that's been has every version nicely preserved, that has like a new master version that's like, this is the one we think you should play, and here's all the you know. I feel like that should be the standard for games that are that beloved, but
you would hope.
The market's just not there for it. And like it's ultimately fine, because I think the alternative that we're in where all of that work is done by fans and everyone plays all the old games for free is probably on balance better. I'm glad that everyone just has libraries of ROMs and mostly it's turned a blind eye to. I think that's better for history on some level. Because the other way is just only the games that culture. We wouldn't be playing fucking Beyond Oasis, right? Like we'd only be playing the good games, or the quote unquote capital G good games that got decided on by culture beforehand.
Yeah. Nick writes in, pitch me a platformer mascot. Who are they? What do they do?
This is impossible for me. I had this. I saw this earlier. I was like, well, they fucking jump. I don't know.
Mine doesn't even jump. I mean, I've pitched this on a podcast before, but no one's made the game yet. I need a game in the style of probably like a Game Freak style, like Drolldozer, or like an early Way Forward style, like GBA game, which is a anime magical girl slash princess with a sword as big as she is. And whenever she swings it, it like takes all of her effort, like it's a Buster sword in real life, but it allows her like pogo jump. She can't like jump, and she's swinging, it takes all of the energy, so you have to charge it up, and then and when you slam it to the ground, it like pogos you into the air to do all your jumps. And it's like a puzzle platformer.
This is such a Jeff Gerstmann woke up and wrote a whole design document type pitch.
I mean, I've mentioned this on podcast for years.
This is the
game I want to see in the world.
I guess I can think of more mechanical ones. It's the design that I have no, like,
A mechanic. That is literally the mechanic. I thought of the mechanic. I have a theming around it visually. It works.
But I'm like, if I could do mechanics, I'd be like, okay, he's, I don't know what the theming of the character would be, but it would be based around like having some kind of like skates at the bottom. I wanted to have skates, and I want to be like constantly moving, like way of combining very light, you know, Jet Set Radio, Tony Hawk influences with a more a Sonic styled 3D platformer. You know, you push even further into the rail grinding stuff. It's stuff that's already in the genre, but I want.
I was going to say you've just invented Jet Set Radio.
No, because I don't want it to be like a collective fun thing. I want it to be Sonic style courses that are like about.
Okay, you just invented a good Jet Set Radio.
Well, yeah, but you know. Yes, I want there to be more games like fucking Spark the Electric Jester that are like post-Sonic exciting course-based games and not Mario 64 style connectors.
I'll be honest, you are getting what you want way more than I'm going to get what I want. That's coming. There's like six of these in development in Steam like right now, right? Like,
Penny's Breakaway is on sale now. I don't know if that's like, yeah. I know it's in that lineage.
It's not really, it's like way slower than that. It's not really what you're asking for. But yeah, no, that's a good game too.
The post-Sonic like 3D platformer wave is finally, after 20 years.
Oh, the people are cooking. There's all sorts of cool games out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Jay writes in, didn't like Dynamite Heady. It's a frustrating game to play. I have a lot of effects from Treasures of other games, Alien Soldiers, Fan Club of One, Logging On. I've never played Alien Soldier. I should. What's your experience of moments in games where you hit a wall that made it so uncharitable to everything around it, no matter how good of a time you're having to that point? Jay hit the tower and had a hard time.
This has happened so many times with me. But I struggle remembering them because this is the true thing about me. And you used to worry about this, but I can get so pissed off with a video game. And then
I don't actually get mad at video games like ever. I don't have this basically in my heart.
When I hit a hard bit in a video game, I'm like, I fucking hate this. This sucks. I'm having a terrible time. Not in like necessarily the rage way, but definitely in a more like complainy way.
Yes.
It's more just like annoyance than I would say like gamer anger.
You're not throwing controllers or anything.
No, but I am like, I hate this. This is a waste of time. This sucks. Why is this in the video game? And then I'll pass it and I'll never think about it again. I'll just never go out of my eyes. But like, I mean, the game was already bad, but you know, special mention to the goats, the ghost from Bioshock Infinite, or every time.
If Bioshock Infinite was any better, the ghost would be the thing we all laugh about and then talk about how we like the game anyway, unless it's not good.
No. If it was a good game, it would be funny that you just had to stand there and fight a ghost for 20 minutes.
Yeah, be like, man, they put the world's worst boss at the end of a game that was otherwise all right, but now the game fucking sucks ass too.
The massive boss rush when you have to fight like all the bosses in the row in the big like void in Devil May Cry 3, that really brings the pacing of that game to a head. Because it's like a puzzle room and you fight every boss again and you're like right at the end of the game, I just want to fight Virgil and Arkham and go.
Yep. I feel this way about the collect-a-thons in Metroid Prime, actually. Like, we have to find all the artifacts. I'm like, I don't want to do this. This sucks.
I would actually say broadly, as a rule, anytime there is a strong momentum going into the end of the game and there's a new thing I have to do preventing me from finishing the video game.
Yes.
I almost always I'm like, please knock it off.
Yeah.
You know, we just talked about the Temple of the Ancients last time, right? Like, there are times when, like, I like a fiddly dungeon, but when there's a video game that is long and I'm here to see the ending of, I would like it to narratively compress in the backstretch.
The fucking Temple of the Fates in Final Fantasy, set 10, and then the Monkey Matchmaker in Final Fantasy X 2 are huge ones.
The Monkey Matchmaker! That's so true.
Whenever someone plays 10, they like in the Discord over, they always come in and are like, do I really need to do the puzzles for the bonus spheres in the temples? It's like, yeah, unfortunately, you really do. Just you look really them up. Do. Don't. You really got to do that.
You don't need to do the 200 lightning bolts, though.
I mean, you can if you want to, but it's really hard now.
You need to hook up a CRT.
Yeah. When I did, the two times I've done in my life were on CRTs, so.
You did it?
Twice.
Okay. Was it what was the one you made your roommate do? Was that the
Blitzball? I've never successfully won a game of Blitzball in my life. I've tried multiple times.
I am one for one in my Blitzball career. I won the Blitzball game.
It was not my roommate. It was one of my friend's girlfriends loved Blitzball, and so we were just like, "Can you do this for us?" She's like, "Yeah, I think it'll take me like an hour and a half." It takes way longer than an hour and a half. Audience, it takes hours, but she forgot, and then we just went and had sushi and like went to the movies and came back. She was still working on it.
This might be it's that, like, you did ask and she offered, so it's not actually cruel, but in the telling becomes like takes on an air of cruelty.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
He went off and watched a movie and had sushi while someone did the Blitzball tournament for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
I wanted Walker's ultimate weapon.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Brendan writes it. Oh, yes.
I was gonna say, when I play 10 again, I bet I'll get into Blitzball.
Okay. Brendan writes in, who's the best C-tier mascot platform character? Think Plock, Blinks, etc. I mean, does Rhystar's good? It's only one game also. Does Staffy count?
Who?
People like Densetsu Staffy, though.
You mean Staffy?
Yeah.
You said it like Staffy, and I was like, what, you mean with
that? Yeah, because that's the Japanese name. Look, when I played those games, there weren't the DS1 had not come out in English yet.
I always got confused between Rhystar and Staffy, because they're both stars in a 2D platform.
Yes, no, I understand.
And I'm like, you can't be this similar, guys, please. I'm only half paying attention to the mascot platform scene.
There was a period of this podcast where we thought about playing bad games, like just out of curiosity. I have a copy, I think I got rid of it. I have a copy of Blinks I acquired at that point, because we were going to play Blinks the Timesweeper, and then that never happened.
That's true. We were going to do that. God, yeah. That'd be terrible. What a terrible episode.
Yeah, we don't like podcasting about bad things is the secret.
This is the thing that people don't understand about, because I'm complaining about things on Twitter and I understand.
You're a famous hater, online hater.
Famous hater online. I actually hate being a hater. I hate not agreeing with people. Like, really conciliatory. The only reason it doesn't feel that way is because I'm on main and I'm being very closed off and not vulnerable. But I prefer talking about things I enjoy.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a great answer for this. When I think of, I always think of like one-off games. Like one of the games I, for some reason, thinking about when we were playing these games was I rented the NES Crash Test Dummies game multiple times, which is about the PSA Crash Test Dummies from, you know, the commercials where it's like buckle your seatbelt so you don't fucking die in an accident. Those guys. Do you even know what I'm talking about? The Crash Test Dummies.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean,
There was like commercials in the late 80s, early 90s, I assume. There were two Crash Test Dummies, you know, like, you know, they run into a wall.
Well, I know show all up. Of Crash Test Dummies, yeah. Like as iconography.
But they were personified. They were just like in commercials, be like, make sure you buckle up and don't end up like us. And then they get in a horrible car accident. And they made a fucking video game out of them where like, if you took damage, you like fall to pieces or whatever. And I rented that game more than once. I don't know why.
The British equivalent is the Hedgehogs, but those are about crossing the road safely.
Okay. That's Frogger. You're thinking of Frogger.
I'm thinking of Frogger, yes. If they were to make a licensed game based on the singing hedgehogs who are like, king of the road, it would be Frogger. Yes, correct. That would be Frogger. Yeah. And then you'd see those hedgehogs dead and covered in blood. My answer is pretty simple. I had it, and I've forgotten it already. But I had it, I'd like... Ape Escape. I guess not really C-tier, but the Ape Escape design.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ape Escape is like A-tier design, C-tier Sony treating it right, but it's a great game. I feel like it doesn't hang.
Well, this is the thing, is I would say, generally speaking, platformer mascots are all terrible. Not 100% of them.
Can I say Nathan Drake? Is it cheating if I say Nathan Drake?
Well, specifically, the 90s edgy platformer guy design. Yeah. I just don't like that aesthetic. And that's usually where most of them are coming from. I don't dislike all of them, right? Ratchet and Clank are fine. I like
anything. How do you feel about Spyro and Crash? I know they're like B-tier.
I think Spyro's okay. Crash is... I like the Crash games, but like Crash is a kind of annoying design, and he got even more annoying in his redesign.
I like Spyro's design a lot. I wish I liked playing Spyro the Dragon more than I do.
I think Spyro's a fine play. It's
About like the weird like... European to do a loop and collect all the gems like gameplay is really annoying to me.
I think it's totally fine for like a 3 hours of video game. It's not really.
Yeah, unfortunately the games are like 8 hours long.
Yeah, well,
when I tried to clear
that?
The trilogy, let me tell you, I got really sick of all the Spyro games.
I only played the first one. I mean, I was like, I'm full up on Spyro.
I completed one and two and got like halfway into three, and I was like, I can't fucking do this anymore.
But I do think when I look at them, when I look at like an image of all the platform mascots, like Google platform mascots, and I see the Ape Escape guys, I'm like, him, that's the one, that's my guy, look at it, perfect guy.
I think the Mischief Makers girl counts here. I like her a lot, she's cool.
The Mischief Makers girl is funny to me because of how terrible the CG is on the cover. I love terrible 90s CG like renders.
Have you seen the, it's like kind of Nintendo hired this man, but there's like a Super Mario 64 mod that tries to make it look like the CG renders from all
yes,
the ads.
It's extremely hired this man, but they're so reflective on the ground.
It's so charming to me. Yes. It's the only one of these I like because it's doing, it knows
it's
that that's
of doing
kind
a
of
bit.
Crappy. Yes. It's kind of doing a bit.
Well, it's not saying like, here's the true...
Yes.
Super Mario.
It's like, look at all of these like bad workstation renders. Isn't it an aesthetic that you have fondness for? And I'm like, yes, it is. Actually, it really is.
Yeah.
Hilver writes in, what do you think the biggest changes in mainstream game development sensibilities would have been if the Mega Drive had outperformed the SNES in the US and Japan?
So I was thinking about this before we recorded, and I have an answer. Nothing!
Yeah, I think the answer is nothing, because I think CD stuff would have taken off. And I think Sony still would have been poised to snipe either. Well, the thing is, Sega, I guess, already had a CD thing, but I still think the PlayStation would have happened, is the thing.
I think the two changes that are, like, more sweeping are the PlayStation changing everything with CDs, and also just, like, PC development.
But the thing is, if the Mega Drive was big, then the Sega CD would have been big outside of Japan, right? So what happens if there's already a CD-ROM console on the market? But I think Sony still wants to get in on that.
Yeah, but I specifically think, like, I think Japan looks different, right? I think the sensibilities that, like, dominate in Japan have changed a little bit. But I think the broad historical changes that happened in the late 90s of video games are much more about consoles getting to the point where the Western PC developers come and start making games on console, shooters taking over, all that stuff still happening. I think like, the world and the globalization of games...
Oh, yeah, everything's still gacha games, is the action.
Yeah, I don't think it changed any of the trends in any fundamental way other than a slight, like, aesthetic difference of late 90s Japan games.
Yeah. Instead of Smash, we have the world's weirdest Sega, one of those.
Also, I think that if... It just says the Mega Drive outperforms the SNES in the US and Japan. I think Nintendo bounces back. For some reason, I still just believe Nintendo would win in the long run because of history.
Well, it's weird because, like, if the Mega Drive outperforms the SNES, do they push the 32X even harder? Because the 32X is, like, really what fucked Sega over.
Right, it was all the... You can go watch that video about product returns.
Yeah, like the West specifically wanted to keep selling Mega Drives, didn't care about the Saturn, thought the Saturn was going to flop, and so pushed the 32X as an add-on. So if they pushed that even harder, it might have accelerated Sega's decline even more than it did, which is rapid and extreme.
Right, because that was... The thing, there was a YouTube video going into Sega's financials, but the thing they got fucked over is on, like, the way retail orders worked.
Yeah.
And they were kind of in, like, an Xbox situation where, because of their success, they had to make more 32Xs, which never sold, so they all got returned. So, yes, they might have actually had an even bigger fall in this world.
My addendum to this is, like, the what-if has to involve the Saturn being big worldwide. Because if that doesn't happen, none of this matters. It all closes up by 98 anyway. Who cares? Mm-hmm. I think Sony entering the market is almost like an inevitability. So I think the PlayStation's good all on its own merits. Though the idea that, like, maybe after Final Fantasy VI, Square makes Final Fantasy for the Sega CD is, like, ridiculous to me.
You know what? I've taken it back. I mean, this universe so bad. What, the Sega CD Final Fantasy game?
Yeah.
Might be the greatest game that happened in any universe.
It's just like another Final Fantasy VI game, but it has anime cutscenes.
Yeah, but they're in the, like, CD music. Fucking Snatcher style of, like...
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Man.
It's like Lunar happening over here.
There's a mid game that you're like, you should play Lunar.
Yeah. Bram, I thought the magic system in Beyond Oasis was really interesting for making you interact with the element of magic you want in games, like interacting with a waterfall or fire to activate the spirit. We didn't even talk about the magic system. We're bad at our job as formalists here.
That's true. You do. Hey, guess what? It does mean that instead of activating your power, you have to look around for the thing to activate the power. There's always one around.
I like that. I think that's kind of fun.
I just wish if it was more puzzle focused, it would make way more sense.
Yes, yes. The game needs better puzzles. If you were a spirit from Beyond Oasis, what would the player have to throw their magic orb at to activate your powers?
Something British, right? Like,
oh, for you? Yeah, sure.
Oh, there's a fish and chips lying on the ground. I can summon Jackson.
I was going to say food for me, so you can't have food. I'm taking food.
Oh, okay, a non-food British thing then.
Soccer ball.
Cool, blimey, did the drum set over there. I haven't played drums regularly in years.
Yeah, that's true. Luke writes in, what's your favorite of the many and varied Zelda knockoff games?
I mean, Beyond Oasis was okay, but I'm trying to think, are there any Zelda knockoffs I like in the way that I enjoy Zelda?
You haven't played Okami.
I haven't played Okami.
I know that's a beloved, but Okami just celebrated an anniversary, so there's been a lot of Okami art on the timeline.
Oh, is it 20 years since Okami?
Yeah, I'm not a huge Okami fan. It's fine. It's like, it's got all the problems of 3D Zelda, though, so I'm not, like, the biggest fan. But I played it through it. When I finally played through it, I enjoyed it, for what it's worth. I think mine actually might be the, which is a truly ridiculous answer, is the DS Adventure Time game that's a Zelda 2 clone, because there's none of Zelda 2s in the world.
Oh, I'm going to dodge the question by talking about Zelda 2 clones. I technically
I mean, I do like Zelda 2 is the thing. What's the name of that game? It is, I want to get the full title. It is Adventure Time Ice King, Why'd You Steal Our Garbage? If you like Zelda 2, it's like a 4-hour one of those.
Yep, nice.
It's for the 3DS.
Yeah, I think I've played enough games to probably answer this. Every time I've tried one, I've been like, I mean, similar to Beyond the Waste, I've been like, the puzzles, it takes too much time to make bespoke puzzles. So, when I played It'll Do, I was like, it's all Switch puzzles that suck.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Does Binding of Isaac count?
Yeah.
Binding of Isaac's clearly my answer, right? Like, Binding of Isaac was literally like, we're going to turn Zelda 1 Dungeon into roguelike, and it's like one of my favorite games of all time. So,
you don't even like Zelda 1.
No, I don't. Not really. I mean, I respect it, right? But, I don't ever want to play it.
Yeah, I would not say, you don't like Binding of Isaac because it's Zelda 1. You like it
No.
It's just
that's why I didn't even think about it initially.
Yeah.
But I was about to shit on Darksiders, was the thing. And then I thought about Binding of Isaac. I don't know why that's my train of thought, but it was. Didn't like Darksiders. The thing I will say about Okami's got puzzles. Darksiders, I didn't get very far in it, but I thought it was miserable and didn't seem to have, it had that many good puzzles. So. Mm-hmm. I know Darksiders eventually kind of gets away from its Zelda-ness, but that first game is just a fucking Zelda game.
Yes.
Moses Plan writes in, Dynamite Heady is one of those games that if it hits right, turns you into a Genesis sicko for life. I saw screenshots of Gunstar Heroes in EGM and thought it looked cool, but my mom refused to rent it from the video store because it had guns on the cover. I rented Heady on accident a year or two later instead, and it's as my first treasure game, it absolutely floored me. Yeah, because I played the English version and didn't have any of the story, but it was wild to me. What was the deal with the code locked door in the ending? Without the internet, I had no idea what any of it meant. And then I watched it on YouTube a couple years ago, which, yep, me too.
The internet does just kill all mystery in video games. That's true.
Yep. In the late 90s, I bought a used copy from Blockbuster when they were liquidating their old 16-bit stock. I definitely bought a lot of games that way. Went full Heady sicko mode, recording a playthrough on VHS to watch the ending over and over. Making a personal soundtrack out of the sound test by holding a pocket tape recorder to my TV speaker. Man, this is 90s kids only.
Oh, this is so cool.
There's no question here. Just talking about this stuff. So my version of this is when I played... when I replayed 8 and 9 of Final Fantasy specifically, I made multiple saves of all the cutscenes because there's no other way to watch cutscenes. So I would just have dozens of saves across multiple memory cards so I could go and watch any cutscene that I thought was cool.
You just were like, I need one next to the Battle of the Gardens so I can always see the Battle of the Gardens.
Yeah, I'll just load up, where's the Battle of the Gardens? This one, so I'm going to load up and watch it. Because there's no player in the game and the YouTube didn't exist, right? None of that, it was around.
That's what you'd have to do. It is kind of weird that they didn't have a cutscene viewer.
It wasn't until 10.
I guess you have to put in all three discs one by one.
Yeah, but even, I still would have done it. It's really weird that there isn't a cutscene viewer.
Yeah.
Because it's the thing they were selling you. Buy the game, watch all the cutscenes. Yeah.
Honestly, it's crazy that you couldn't buy, a DVD of, here's the scenes, a 40-minute DVD.
Oh, I feel like that has to be some sort of Japanese-only merch, right?
That seems to be it. That's exactly the kind of thing. In Japan, they had a DVD. You could buy all the cutscenes.
Yeah, they had a laser disc of all the cutscenes in higher quality, and it cost $85.
This is exactly what learning about Japanese merch is like every time. Yes.
I assume this totally missed you, just from generationalness.
Well, I mean, I'd rented video games and liked them, but yeah, I wasn't recording things with a mic.
I never did the recording soundtracks thing, no.
It missed me because of generationalness, but it also missed me because I wasn't playing games that were good.
That's true, yeah.
I guess my closest one is I would load up different Halo missions to see the Halo missions, but it had a mission select, and the cutscenes are about 5 minutes long. It's not the same thing as RPGs or, a cool 90s treasure platformers. I just didn't have this in my life until the 2010s.
That's fair. Eric writes in, 1, who are you casting the film adaptation of Dynamite Heady? Who's got the chops to capture Mario Yama's essence on screen? Who would you like to hear shout target, target? I kind of want Jack Black for every role. I want classic late 90s Whose Line Is It Anyway American cast.
Just the whole thing? The entire thing?
Yes.
Who's the fourth chair? the impossible, because we know what 3 of the chairs are.
Yeah, but, yeah, I don't know. I don't really care. I'll be honest.
Oh, is it Greg Proops? I don't know.
I mean, if you're going to make me pick one, I think I would pick Proops. I like Proops a lot.
Proops is good.
But I want Colin Mockery shouting target target.
Colin Mockery can shout a good target target if he knew about video
absolutely.
Games.
Do you think the game would be better or worse if you could aim 360 with the analog stick? It'd be worse. 1,000%.
I mean, like I said, the thing I want was the less movement. I wanted to be able to plant my feet so I could get the 8 directions better.
Yeah. What do you think exactly prevented Heading from being a successful mascot character? I mean, obviously the market was totally saturated, but even Bubsy got sequels. Why isn't there a Dynamite Heading 2? Treasure didn't want to make one.
Yeah, I assume that's just like, because the game was like successful in Japan, right? Like it wasn't like a bomb or anything. I think it was just the Treasure were making other video games. They're just making too many weird things to make.
Yeah, I mean, the Treasure is extremely like, everything we're going to make is bespoke and ridiculous, right? That's the sickos they were.
Yeah, I just don't think it was a mascot platformer, but I don't think it was positioned to become like a mascot franchise in that way.
They weren't. It's not Alex Kidd where it's like, this is going to be the Mario of the Master System.
Yeah. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
My favorite VTuber this afternoon is playing Alex Kidd Miracle World today, and she posted a picture of Alex Kidd doing the fucking rock, paper, scissors the other day, and I had PTSD flashbacks to me playing that game on her YouTube channel, because that game is fucking terrible.
You were like, oh, I'm going to go back to the Master System and understand this other way. And then you played that game and you were like, it's the worst game of all time.
It's the worst game of all time. Man, I fucking hate Alex Kidd.
You really do.
Yeah. Cause that song is what I'm going to hear when I die is the thing. Emrys writes in, as a Genesis kid, I tried to play Beyond Oasis a dozen times, and while I enjoyed the gameplay quite a bit, I could never beat the second boss and would go back to playing whatever was holding my attention, like Shadowrun, Shining Force, or Phantasy Star. I've never played Shadowrun or Shining Force. This is my lack of Mega Drive knowledge. Do you have any games you distinctly remember liking but never being able to finish? Bonus points if they're a game from your childhood. Yeah, a bunch of them.
All the video games I play, like... it'd be easier to, like, I finished Halo, I finished Ninja Gaiden.
Well, we've talked about this because you weren't a finisher, but I finished, like, games I owned, like Nintendo games, I usually finished, but the games I rented, like, or like I borrowed from friends, I remember the Tiny Toons NES game I really liked, I could never get far enough into it. I owned the NES Beetlejuice game, which I literally was watching a long play of like 2 weeks ago, because I was like, I need to know what the fuck this game is. And I realized like why I never finished as a kid, because it's a fucking bullshit game for assholes. One of those is way too hard and obscure, and I was a kid and didn't know anything. And it's not a good game anyway, even if you do understand how it works, because there's a lot of games like that of the era. There's so many. It's all like NES games for me, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had borrowed Castlevania 2 from someone and never got very far in it because that game is confusing if you play the original English release. I owned Zelda 2 and could never figure it out. I get like to the second dungeon and never further. It wasn't until I was an adult that I finished that game. It's one of my favorite Zelda games now. But that was the most opaque. Part of the reason I like it is because it was the most opaque, mysterious thing in the world to me as a kid.
I'm trying to remember how many games that were like, when I played them as a kid, were actually too hard, or how many games, like, because they're like, what? James Bond episode. I played that game. I got stuck on it. But did I get stuck on it, or did I get stuck once and drift away? It's mostly the drifting away. I'm trying to think of like
it's hard to know as a kid. I've gone back and revisited like in either playing or watching videos of a lot of the game. And the thing, especially because I'm talking about games from like the NES and SNES era, is a lot of games were just fucking bad, and the endings were like bullshit on purpose, and they were hard.
Yeah, like I remember finishing X-Men Legends 2. That's a good game.
I remember, yeah, that's a game where I bought it. This is way later, obviously. I'm like in my 20s playing that game, and early 20s probably. I never intended to finish that game, but it was just like, I was like, man, this is really good. I just ended up playing the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, I finished Spider-Man 2. I finished more games than I remember, but it's like, you know.
Hulk Ultimate Destruction. I definitely 100% of that game. That game gets bullshit at the end.
That game gets, that one you can put on a thing that was actually too hard when they were like,
what if mechs everywhere? And you're like, fuck you.
Because I enjoyed the game is good because you're like, it is fun as a power fantasy. It's not fun as a challenging, hard video game. That's just annoying.
This is the open world staple, is, and at some point they turn up the difficulty and you're like, this isn't fun anymore.
Oh, this was never a good game. It was just kind of like a fun toy. Shit.
Yeah. Yes. And yet I did finish it. So
there you go.
Yep. Olivia writes in, if M had been a Sega sicko during the 90s, what game or game series would you have gone hard for, excluding Phantasy Star? I don't think it'd be Sonic, because I just don't like 2D Sonic that much. And here's the thing, is I don't know what other franchises exist on Sega consoles like that. I'm sure they exist. I'm not super like well up on that stuff. I think I would be an action game sicko, and it'd be stuff like Gunstar Heroes and Dynamite Head. They're all one-offs, right? Like these are the coolest games ever made. Heaven help me if I become like an Earthworm Jim guy. They're like the worst guys in the world. And not just because the guy who made Earthworm Jim is like a transphobe and stuff now. I just never understood the like people who are like, this has so many frames of animation and thus it's good because it's like a wacky cartoon. And I was like, yeah, it's a wacky cartoon that sucks.
I think they say never. I thought you were going to say, not just because they're British.
No. I always thought Earthworm Jim was a piece of shit. But yeah, I don't really have a good answer for you. Maybe it's because I just don't know enough Mega Drive stuff. But I think my answer is I'd be one-off, like, action game-brained. Because it's like, I didn't even get into RPGs until like the PSX, like PlayStation era. Like really, like I'd played Earthbound and Mario RPG, but I wouldn't call myself a super RPG sicko.
No, that happened. Because Mario RPG, you played that not knowing what RPGs were.
It's a Mario, it's a Mario game, and I played Earthbound because it was like, if you like Mario RPG, this is the one of the big ones. It was like I couldn't find a copy of Chrono Trigger on sale because they were sold out, so I bought, because the Nintendo Power was like, these are the RPGs, and I was like, if Mario's an RPG, then I should buy one of the other good RPGs, and I ended up with Earthbound.
Man, imagine just getting Earthbound.
Well, imagine the actual weirder path is if instead of getting Earthbound, I got Chrono Trigger and was one of those people who thinks Chrono Trigger is one of the greatest games ever made, instead of someone who thinks it kind of is annoying.
Yes.
Different. I don't think actually anything's that different, but I would be, I think, 10% more annoying as a person. If Jackson had been born before 2005, what 90s game series would you have consumed in your time, excluding Final Fantasy?
I think this one's really easy for me. I think I am hardcore into 90s shooters. I think I'm like...
Oh, really? Okay, this is not my answer.
I think I'm like Doom. I think I'm like Dark Forces.
I do see it. I do think you're right on this. My gut reaction was like, you're a Resident Evil sicko.
If I'm getting consoles, then yes. But I was like thinking about the actual games I was playing as a kid and the way I was gravitating.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're totally
like this is
you're playing Sin. You pick Sin over over Half-Life.
I fix Sin. I have like, oh, I really fell off after X-Wing versus TIE Fighter type opinions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, you're this person.
I will occasionally be playing like Heroes of Might and Magic. I mean, like, that's too complicated for me. I think I gotta like push into the other like the good PC games, but I don't.
And you're
push
not
that
you're not old enough to be like a specky person because that's like 10 years before that even, because there's like a whole other type of British gamer PC like all the personal like the small computers that's all into some shit that's dead by the 90s basically.
I do want to say that this question says if I'd been born before 2005.
Which is not when you were born.
I was born in 1993. But yes, I do think if I was like born 5 years earlier and got like a PC earlier and like I just had more access to video games, I would have gone down that route rather than the console games. Just being British, the things I had available to me, the things I was into as a child, not just now. I think that's absolutely the way I go. I've got strong opinions about the build engine.
Sergio writes in. A couple questions. Thought Beyond Oasis combo system chafed a bit against its action RPG systems by really focusing on the positioning and timing sequences. Was there any specific combo you stuck with for most of the game? I was partial to the backflip slash myself. Are there any examples you can think of games where unique ideas didn't completely succeed but were interesting enough that it didn't really matter?
Most video games.
What?
That's most video games to me. Like
that's true. I mean, my gut thing immediately was like PNO 3. Capcom Classic Piano 3.
Yeah, I've not played it, but I've seen enough footage of it to be like, yeah, that's probably... If I played it, I'd be like, wow, that's so cool for about half an hour, and then been like, this was a terrible idea for the rest of it.
Yeah, I've never finished it because of that exact thing where I'm like, this is really neat. Wait, there's not really a game here, but it is really cool. Yeah, absolutely. There was a weird roguelike mode in Urguys, God Bless the Ring, the square fucking fighting game.
Ahead of its time! Ahead of its time! The time is now, 2024, the Urguys revival is here!
Yeah, and I played a lot of that, not knowing what the fuck it was, why you went into this weird dungeon and fought lizard men in like a weird arena fighting game.
If I had Genie Wish, Death Note, whatever, Power or something, I would make it so that there is a trailer. The Final Fantasy 7 guys come out, everyone loses their mind, and it's for new guys.
I would pop off so hard. I would be Nintendo fan watching the Smash trailer. Everyone is here screaming, jumping and screaming.
I think it might be the best thing that could ever happen. It's just like a straight, it'd be this similar fighting game with, I don't know. I've not played Urguys. I just know of it, but it would have the same RPG mode. Because I think if you put like a 3D fighting game with an RPG mode like that, now it would hit way better. People would really like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're just trying to bring back guys.
And then the second question, is there a genre or type of game you enjoy watching someone else play, but dislike to play yourselves?
This is me watching people playing PC RPGs that I'm too, they're just too much for me to actually bother learning all the way in, but I have curiosity with.
So I have two answers here. One is like really old adventure games. I watch Dia play those. Yes. Dia's been playing through King's Quest, played through the first three King's Quests. They're on her YouTube. Give her a dollar. Or it's on her Patreon. It's like through YouTube, but give her a dollar. Go to patreon.com/DiaLucina. Give her a dollar. Watch her play King's Quest 1 through 3. All the other games she's been playing, she played Loom. I think Loom is like approachable for a modern person, but King's Quest is not. And I'm very happy that I didn't have to play that to understand what the fuck it was. I think that it's really cool, and she talks through the puzzle logic, and it's good. The other one is like classic, like PC, like blobbers, right? Like first person dungeon
yes,
crawlers.
Those are the ones I'm
I've got an LP guy that I like. I don't know if he's like, you know, I'm not vouching for anyone's politics or anything. But he's called Ghost LPs. And like the GH and LP are capitalized and everything else is lowercase. And he's just been playing first person dungeon crawlers for fucking a decade on YouTube. He's one of those guys that's like got 4,000 subscribers and 10,000 videos, right?
The true lifeblood of YouTube.
Yeah, he's got 5.92K subscribers and 5.4K videos. And I rarely complete one of the games he's playing because when I can't sleep, I put them on and fall asleep to them. But I love watching him play through old RPGs. And it's just like a genre that I don't care enough about D&D mechanics to ever get good at.
Every few months, I think, what if I got into blobbers? What if I like had a wizardry phase? Every time I'm like, I'm not actually going to spend the time to do that. At most, I should play Etrian Odyssey like once.
Yeah. I'm like, but I'm like, I've never heard of Betrayal at Krondor. What's that? And I watch it. I'm like, man, this game's fucking cool. I'm never playing it.
This is the whole alternate universe of like pre like Infinity Engine RPGs.
Yeah, and me just saying Betrayal at Krondor like made someone's heart sore and then immediately dash their hopes. I go, I'm never playing it. And I understand there's like a whole type of person that might even listen to this podcast that doesn't like, we're never going to play those games. I'm sorry. They're just not in our wheelhouse.
It wouldn't be interesting, like, if we did.
Yeah.
We're going to be like, today we shall be playing Curse of the Azure Bonds, the D&D game.
Yeah. But they're interesting. I'm interested in them. I just don't want to play them myself. Like realistically, I know what I can bring to discussing games, and I don't think I have anything to say about that anyone wants to actually listen to.
Yes.
And that brings us to the end of the questions. Again, abnormalmappingpodcast@gmail.com. Next time, Jackson, you picked a game for us.
Yeah. I said we were looking for a game. Wanted it to be a little different from what we've done recently. Not a new game and in a different vibe. And I was like, what if we just played Myst 3? Exile.
Oh, you mean Myst 3 Exile?
I believe Myst 3 Exile, because we did, you know, Myst, and we did Riven, the sequel to Myst.
And then we sold to Ubisoft.
And then we took that money and we put our feet up and let someone else make the video. I guess they were making Uru Ages of Myst, so they're actually doing something wild.
Which is not what I don't think we're ever going to be playing Uru Ages of Myst.
Well, you can buy a product called Uru Ages of Myst. Yes. It is like a compendium of everything they did, but it's not Uru Ages of Myst.
Yeah.
The social MMO that they made forever, the dream that never was real.
Yes.
But we're playing Myst 3. I'm curious. I'm excited.
Yeah, I know it's considered as a much easier but less good game than Riven, which, fair enough.
I'll probably bug you to play that with you at some point on a weekend.
Okay.
As we go, because I'm like, I remember when I played Oberdin with Nora. That was great. So I was like, okay. I might do that on Skype with you if you're free. If you're not, I'll do it myself, but depends how it all works out.
Grab Dia.
Dia, come solve these puzzles with me.
Yeah. Dia's never played. I think when we told Dia, I think I told Dia we were doing this, then Dia was like, I've never played that one.
Well, if I can't get you, maybe I'll get someone else to do it on Skype. But I like having someone to bounce ideas off. Playing Oberdin with Nora, genuinely one of my top 5 gaming experiences of all time. If you've never played Secret of the Oberdin, strongly recommend doing it either with someone else on
it's
the couch.
It's not called Secret of the Overden, is it? That's not the name of that game.
Secret of the Overden.
Return of the Overden.
Return of the Overden. Shit. Return of the Overden.
I was like, secret's not the right word. I don't know what the right word is. I had to look it up. But I was like, it's not secret.
Return of the Overden. Sorry. If you've not played Return of the Overden.
It's Secret of the Overden and then...
out of time. Yeah. The door of the bit is closed.
No, I immediately forgot all of the fucking Monkey Island stuff.
I know what you were doing.
Return of the Overden. Yeah, I don't remember at all.
The Curse of the Overden.
Yes, there we go. Thank you. God, fuck.
But strongly recommend if you've not played that game, either with someone else on the couch or with someone else on Skype, you don't have to stream it. You can just both have the EXE opened up. Return of the Overden, having that with someone else and bouncing ideas off. Genuinely, that's as good as video games get to me.
Yeah. So yeah, look forward to that. Hopefully that's like a shorter game. I imagine it is. Probably got way more FMV than the other two games, is my bet.
Oh, imagine how much fun they had just showing up to record the FMV.
Yeah. Anyway, plugs, Jackson.
You can find me at HeadFallsOff on Twitter and co-host and Blue Sky. Usually at Twitter, sometimes at co-host. Very, very rarely at Blue Sky. But if he sets us all free and kills Twitter like he should do, then I'll be at Blue Sky. And you can find the podcast we do at normalmapping.com. A bunch of cool podcasts there.
You can find me mostly on Twitter at @EM_being. If you would like to support the show and get bonus podcasts, you can do that at patreon.com/abnormalmapping. For $1 a month, you get the Great Gundam Project. We're about to start Gundam Unicorn, which I know is a lot of people's first Gundam, which God help you. And because you did it way out of order. Please go back and watch First Gundam. I think that's going to be a popular season. That's coming in like a week. A week, I guess, from when this comes out. So please look forward to that. For $5, you get Blockbusters, where you watch Hollywood movies. Our most recent one was Kingdom of Heaven, Director's Cut, which was a great episode on a pretty good movie. And for $10, you get VoIP Life, which is a bunch of bullshit. We're actually recording the next one right after this. I don't know what that's going to be. Our friend Molly from Journal Updated and Totally Reprise is going to be on that one, who is like nicely waiting for us to finish this podcast, which has gone a little over time today.
Yes.
I play video games with Dia most weeks. They go up on like Monday or Tuesday at Dia's YouTube channel at youtube.com/@DiaLucina. We're currently playing My Summer Vacation 2, one of the coolest games I've ever played, but we've also played Gabriel Knight 2 and Flower, Sun, and Rain, two of the other coolest games we've ever played, and some other lesser games besides. But we play a lot of bangers over there. So if you want to watch us pick around at some very interesting games, please check those out, because I'm very happy with me and Dia kind of doing short form podcasts while we play slow video games.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I think it's some of my least seen but like most interesting work. Mm-hmm. And also like multiple favorites of all time that we've covered on those videos.
Like, you've discovered multiple games, you're like, this is one of the greatest games of all time.
Yes.
So strong
hand. And also we played Space Quest, which fucking sucks.
They can't all be winners.
Yeah. Flower, Sun, and Rain, I think about all the time. One of the best games ever made. And My Summer Vacation 2, unsurprisingly, probably going to be in that echelon when we finish it. So
it seems sick.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. We'll be back in a month. We'll talk about Mystery Exile, other things besides. I don't know what else we're doing this year. I mean, obviously, Shenmue 2 is coming. Don't know when. It's always on the table. So look forward to that whenever. But you were talking about Shenmue today, and I was like, man, fucking Shenmue.
Shenmue is fucking
one of the greatest games of all time. I'm like a little worried. I'm like, Shenmue 2 is not going to be a Shenmue. It can't be Shenmue.
I've made my peace. I can't possibly like it more than the story of Shenmue, which is already feels complete. He leaves on that boat, and we're done. Like,
yes. Yeah.
So whatever happens next, I'll enjoy. But
he left Mark. Like, once you leave Mark, what are you going to do?
That's so true. they just can't do anything as good as eating lunch on the dock with your boys.
Yes. Yeah. that's video games. Thanks, everybody. Please share the podcast, rate and review on iTunes or whatever. It does help to share the show as we crank through our 11th year of doing this. Can you imagine?
Oh, I don't say that out loud. For some reason, 10 years, refined, good, strong podcast. 11 years, we've been here too long.
No, we're just getting started.
That's so true. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.